Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
What's up, boxing fans? This is Rope-A-Dope Radio. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. Tonight on the show, Samaje Thomas, who's a prospect. We'll have an interview with him in just a couple of minutes. Then we'll get into the weekend. And oh, what a boxing weekend it was. ESPN2 Friday night fights. Friday night fight. I don't know what's going on. Friday night fights had a great card. They had a triple header themselves. So did HBO on Saturday. There were some fights in Cancun, Mexico. That was very, very good. We'll talk all about it. I mean, to see all those fans in Chicago, you know, outdoors in that stadium, 10,000 plus, it sounds like, as far as comps included. Either way, what a crazy, crazy crowd. Really fun to watch. Good idea. We'll break down the broadcast as well. I like some of the things they did, like showing the replay before the heavyweight fight and whatnot, just how they started the show. I thought it was a great idea to have them in the ring. But either way, we'll break down those fights. And, of course, the HBO triple header, man, a variety of stuff. We saw a quick knockout, not a big surprise there, by Kovalev. For some reason, I always say Kovalev with him. I don't know why. We saw Barker Gill, which has to be up there in the top five, top ten for fight of the year. It's one of the better fights of the year. Barker and Gill going back and forth. Barker getting off the mat. I mean, he was hurt. We'll talk about that. And then Martinez against Romero. Romero was being, you know, basically they were trying to showcase him anyway. And get him ready for a possible fight with Rigan Diao, something HBO's been, you know, trying to figure out what they're going to do with Rigan Diao. We'll talk about that situation. We'll talk about that fight. What a great fight. I'd say the best triple header of the year for HBO. We know Showtime and their triple headers. One, they have more triple headers. Usually, you know, the HBO Boxing After Dark, which they're calling a lot of these HBO After Darks, even though there's two or three championships on the line. I think they're doing that so their ratings look good compared to other, you know, HBO After Dark. I really don't know what they're calling them for, you know, summer. But either way, they've been stepping up their game with the triple headers finally, whereas Showtime, they've been giving us solid triple headers for quite some time. And obviously a lot of triple headers as well on Showbox. But this was, I think, the best triple header of the year as far as two-way fights, upsets, action, KOs, and all that. So we'll get into all that. Like I said, of course, Giovanni Segura came back. We'll talk about his fight just a little bit in that great fight with the Japanese fighter and Sergio Thompson from Cancun. That was a good fight as well. And then, of course, you know, we had Friday. We had Saturday, but I can't forget. We had a Monday night fight. Yeah, that's right. I said it. Monday night. Not Monday night football, which a lot of people are, you know, up in arms. Why are they doing it on Monday night? Because of the Monday night football. We'll get into that as well. They're not going to do it every Monday night. I know that. And if the series does pretty good throughout the year, I think that they have room for Tuesdays and Thursdays that, you know, they're already going to do, you know, a Fox Sports card during the week of the Mayweather-Canelo fight on Thursday. So Either way, Danny Jacobs, wow. What a great knockout over Lorenzo. I mean, they were talking about it after on the sports, on FS1, on their sports show. And then, you know, it made the highlights for ESPN. So, man, what a great knockout. But we'll get into that. We'll kind of wrap up that card. And we'll talk about that broadcast since it was their debut, Golden Boy Live on FS1. And we'll talk about the good, the bad, you know, that type of thing. And then, of course, this weekend, we'll preview, debate, and predict Abner Meyers versus Yanni Gonzalez and Leo Santa Cruz versus Victor Tarazaz. Tarazaz, I think it is. Tarazaz. Yeah, something like that. I always mess up his name. But either way, he's coming off a big win. He's just got a belt, and we know Leo Santa Cruz. That should be an action fight. I don't know. I think that's a good fight. I think that Santa Cruz will probably win, but we'll get into that. I think it'll be fun to watch no matter what, just because Santa Cruz brings it, of course, and I think the champion will definitely bring it as well. We'll get into some news. We'll talk about the Friday night fights. We'll talk about some of the other fights coming up on the schedule. You know, we'll talk about a variety. Terrence Crawford now has an opponent for October 5th. Victor Ortiz, who was last seen two Junes ago with a broken jaw from Jose Cito Lopez. He's actually going to come back to boxing, if you can believe it. We know he's been out for a good reason, his broken jaw, but he was going to come back in September. Then he got a role in a movie, Expendables Part 3. 1 and 2, wow, just classic cinematography. But he's got a role, and good for him, you know, Dancing with the Stars, now a movie role. It is what it is. We're going to talk about maybe some of the guys he's going to return against. I wouldn't doubt if it's Alfonso Gomez. That was the plan anyway for September. He's going to return in December. And, you know, Zab Judah, we'll talk about him. He's in the news. We'll talk about Golovkin, Curtis Stevens. Sounds like that's a done deal for November 2nd. We talked about that last week and how we think he's making a mistake, turning down good money. The Dinner of Champions, HBO, we'll talk about that as well. So well, we got a variety of stuff to talk about. A lot of debate about Canelo Alvarez's weight, current weight, 30-day weight. We'll talk about that as well. So there's a lot to talk about. And just any moment now, Samaje Thomas should be calling in. If not, I can give him a ring. I'm pretty sure, you know, he was supposed to call in pretty soon here in the first couple of minutes. But after that, like I said, we'll get into that recap, and then we'll get after that doubleheader for Showtime, because that's going to be an action-packed doubleheader. And obviously, you know, it's supposedly supposed to lead to a fight if Santa Cruz, you know, gets by his guy and Abner gets by his fight. You know, a big fight with them, which would be explosive, no doubt about it. But, you know, Santa Cruz has got his toughest test, even though I believe Tarazaz, how do I say it? Let me look at his name here. Tarazaz. Tarazaz, you know, he's a good fighter. He's coming off a very solid win, but it's a solid win for his career. He also has the Montiel. You know, that's a very solid win at the time. Montiel's not necessarily in his prime, obviously, and it, you know, that type of thing, got knocked out, we know, by Nonito. So those are two solid wins, you know, maybe against guys that aren't necessarily in their primes. But, yeah, I think it's going to be a good fight, man. It's going to be a good fight. We'll see if Santa Cruz can get the stoppage or if he's just, you know, if he's going to be able to get that done. Either way, you know, while we're waiting for Samaje, why don't we get into some of this recap, man? Let's get into some of this recap. And I think that just because he could call any time, instead of getting into the depth of Barker and Gill, because there are some people out there, you know, looking at scorecards from across the world, across the country, from the fans, looking at Twitter and all that. There are plenty of people that thought, you know, think Daniel Gill won the fight. And I'm not going to sit there and fight it too much. You know, I myself haven't watched the fight again just yet. I plan on doing that very soon and rescoring it. A very tight fight, but either way, there's a lot of depth to get into with that. And I think we should start out with, you know, Sergey Kovalev. Kovalev versus Nathan Cleverly. Kovalev, man, wow. I mean, this guy. And, you know, I didn't think much of Nathan Cleverly coming into the fight. I mean, most people had him, you know, favored in the fight. The bookies, even in the UK, the bookies had Sergey Kovalev, you know, the favorite. They had him the favorite for sure. You know, Kovalev, he came out and was active. I mean, this guy was active. He landed, let me see my notes here, 33 of 95 shots in the first round. The only thing Cleverly was able to do is land a jab, you know. But the thing is, Cleverly, he came out just going forward, and he was taking a lot of punches. The left hook, overhand rights, and just overall, he was taking punches. He did land his jab, but Kovalev, you know, he was putting it on him from the start. I mean, from the start he was. Second round, lead left. You know, he started getting that lead left hook around the guard. You know, Cleverly had his hands up, but the guard, you know, he was hooking that. That left hook was perfectly landing in behind the gloves. And, this, you know, a jab, and then a straight right hand, you know. And he actually had him in that second round on the ropes, and he landed left hooks to the head in the body. I mean, early on, it was looking like, wow, dude, this isn't good for him. Now, Cleverly, once again in the second round, he did land some jabs, but he actually landed a couple of good right hands. I'll give him that. In the third round, two knockdowns, a right cross hurt him, got things going. You know, and of course, I mean, anybody that's seen Cleverly fight, especially Belu, that Tony Belu fight, I thought he lost that fight, and I saw enough weakness in that fight that I thought, you know, he'd lose this fight. But I also called, if he got hurt, that he would showboat. And what do you know? He started showboating. A lot of times he puts his hands in his hair or in the air or wiggles his shoulders or, you know, has fun. A lot of people do that. And sure enough, he was hurt in the third round, and he started showboating a little bit. And Kovalev gave him like a pelvic thrust back and started throwing punches off him. And he hurt him. He hurt him with the left hook, two left hooks for the second knockdown. He almost dropped him again right with a big body shot at the end. It was two right hooks for the first knockdown. I don't think I said that, but the two lefts for the second knockdown. And like I said, he hurt him right near the end of that round. I mean, the ref was there. Otherwise, he was kind of that could have been a knockdown because he was already falling down. You know, he was in trouble, man. There were some thumping body shots near the end and throughout. And of course, you know, I mean, Kovalev jumped right on him. Left hook, legs were wobbly, to say the least. I mean, he was wobbled. And then, you know, another left hook, early left hook, just a couple flurries, basically a left hook finished it. I think he had a little body shot in there as well. It's funny, though, because HBO was already saying, and of course, you know, HBO, we see this all the time with them. You know, Roy Jones and Kellerman were talking about how, man, Kovalev's already gassing. And Roy Jones actually went as far as saying he's already gassed and he's, you know, he's arm punching. He basically, you know, besides a few right hands, everything else is dead already. And Max agreed. And it's like, what? You know, I didn't understand that. I thought, though, overall, the left hook, the body that he mixed in just in general was very effective, and it kept him landing and kept him throwing in combination. And, man, I'll tell you what, he just came on like a storm, and he didn't stop. He just didn't stop. And, I knew he'd win the fight. I thought he'd knock him out, But I didn't think, and actually I'm just checking something real quick. I didn't think it would be that. I mean, when I say I think he'd knock him out, you know, that's pretty decisive. But I still didn't think it would be that quick. Like, I mean, it was over. A lot of people are saying, you know, man, you know, why didn't, you know, when you're getting hit, why don't you get on your back foot or whatever, you know? And it's like, that's not how he fights, you know? I mean, does he use a lot of punches on the outside? On the outside, yeah, but he's still in front of his man and just outside the pocket in a lot of his fights anyway. He's not a good inside fighter. And, you know, you're not all of a sudden. I hear a lot of people. I was listening to the Boxing Voice show earlier from Sunday, the recap, and a lot of people calling in and seeing on Twitter, like, why didn't he do this? Why didn't he do that? And getting text messages and on Twitter some messages and saying, God, man, he, you know, he really messed up the game plan. But honestly, I mean, that's how he fights, man. He throws punches, you know. That's how he fights. So what's he going to do? You know what I mean? Like, you don't just all of a sudden change one day without showing something. You know what I mean? So to me, he was what he was. And if you want him to all of a sudden start boxing, he can't do that. So why would he do that? Just because he's getting hurt. I mean, he tried to hold a little bit, but he was getting hurt so much, he couldn't even get to Kovalev's, like, body or, you know, he couldn't even get his arms around him because his legs were so wobbly and just mush by that time that, you know, I mean, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? So, you know, would a different game plan last, you know, a couple more rounds? Yeah, maybe, but that's it. I mean, it wouldn't have mattered. It wouldn't have mattered at all. And CT, I see ya. Definitely going to get to the callers here and get their take on this and plenty other action from last weekend. But right about now, I'm going to go ahead and bring in Samad J. Thomas. He's got a fight coming up here, August 30th, coming up for his pro debut. What's going on, Samad J.? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How y'all doing, man?
Man, we're doing good, man. We had a crazy fight weekend. And we're just kind of recapping that, talking that, you know, talking about last weekend and how many good fights there were. But let's talk about you, Samad J. The Truth Thompson. He's a guy that had, you know, pedigree up the Thomas. Did I say Thompson? Sorry about that. Thomas. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. but, you know, we've had you on the show a couple times. You know, we've gotten into your backstory. Go ahead and Google Samad J. Thomas right now. And listen to his backstory because, man, it's worth it. The guy's, you know, at a young age, the man now, has gone through a lot in his teenage years, which are now, you know, past him, and he's about to make his pro debut. And just, you know, it's coming up August 30th. It's right around the corner. Obviously, you had a little teaser, you know, in your first your first possible pro debut, which something we'll talk about, but how are you feeling just on the eve almost, you know, it's not tomorrow or nothing, but you're really, I mean, it's just days away now. How does it feel to make August 30th, you know, in your home state making the pro debut, man?
It's a blessing, man. You know, I couldn't ask for nothing more to make it my first pro fight in Chicago. You know, we train hard. You know, we did all our preparation for this fight, and we're more than ready. We're ready to fight tomorrow if the fight to happen tomorrow. So we in shape. You know, I'm going. I'm boxing at least 8 to 12 rounds. I'm sorry, 8 to 10 rounds. You know, which is a lot of different. So I'm in crucial shape.
Well, you know. Yeah, you're ready. I bet you are, man, because we'll talk about all – I mean, even though you didn't – like, you know, you should be on, like, fight 3 or 4 by now, but you know what? You still got a lot of work, and we'll talk about all the different camps, including your personal camp right now. But what's the stadium called? It's Cicero? Is that how you say that?
The Cicero.
Cicero, okay.
Yeah.
All right, Cicero. So Cicero Stadium in Cicero, Illinois, Friday, August 30th. It's the night of the Rising Stars, Hits Boxing Entertainment. Make sure you get your tickets. Cicero. Okay, perfect. So, like I said, you're about to make your pro debut. How's training camp going right now? Like you said, you've been sparring 8 to 10 rounds. How long, basically, have you been in this camp? And when did you find out? When did you know your new date, August 30th? Was it a couple weeks ago, or have you known for a while? When did you actually find out so you really could just kind of focus in on, okay, now we can plan for this exact time?
I think it was a month ahead. You know, they were telling me that they was pulling to do a fight show and they wanted me to be a part of the show. And they called me and you know, it was, you know, Nate Jones, we was talking, and at first he wasn't gonna have me fight in Chicago.
Right.
But the last few delays, you know, that I was supposed to fight on the shows, and they all got canceled. So, you know, for whatever reason, but you know, I couldn't really say no because my family's here, my fans are here, and I'm just ready to put on a good show in Chicago. And show everybody that it's a new star in boxing, and he's on his rise.
There you go. And let's talk about, you know, this pro debut that got canceled. The commission, and I'm not, you know, we're not going to sit here and badmouth any commission, but they actually felt that the opponent, that you were too experienced, although the opponent had like 100 amateur fights. Both of you are amateurs at the moment because you're not pros just yet. What'd you think of that, man? Back in March or April, whenever it was, they, you know, to be all focused and you know, get ready to make your pro debut. What was that like when you heard that excuse, man? What was going through your head?
Oh my God, it was so ridiculous, man. We trained hard. We trained. I was training in the Mayweather boxing gym in Vegas,
right,
with Floyd and his team and his crew out there. And,
right.
So I was talking about it, you know, they were like, "My team's gonna win," you know. I was getting geeked, and to find out that a lot of opponents had recanted on signing the agreement, the fight agreement, and we ran into Justin, and Justin agreed to fight us. You know, he was like one in three. And you know, he had he's supposed to have over 60 or 70 or 100 some amateur fights, and he was ready, and so we weighed in, we walked to the ring. I walked in the ring in the building with my team, and they
right.
Went, "Hey, Smart, You can come in, but you're not fighting." I'm like, what do you mean? You know, it was like, I'm like, man, I weighed in, I did everything, I passed all the tests. He got his license. They was like, no, they want to ask for his amateur book. I'm like, his amateur book? What do you need his amateur book for? He's a professional fighter. He's not an amateur no more. He's a professional fighter. We're both professional fighters. We don't need our amateur books to show how many amateur fights we have or nothing like that. You know, he's a professional fighter, and they put the fight. They said I was too experienced for him, and one of the reasons, you know, it kind of, man, it's just hard to explain, man. I was so hurt. I sold so many tickets.
Yeah,
my whole wanted to come there. Everybody showed up. I just don't know. That was just some BS, man. But it's
yeah,
all good, though.
That was random. Yeah, I mean, it's over now. And like I said, I don't want to get you in, you know, hot water with any commission or nothing. But it was just ridiculous to get you that close to it. Like you said, weigh in and everything. Usually, I mean, a guy that I was talking to, Estrella, Donovan Estrella, who was just about to make his pro debut a couple of days before his, the fighter pulled out. That's a little different. But to get you weighed in and get you in the arena and then say, nah, dude, you can't fight because of some random stuff, and then they need your amateur. It was just weird, man. But I'm glad that that's over. You know what I mean? That's over. And now we got August 30th, Friday, coming up real soon, man.
Okay.
And, so we got a brand new, you know, brand new date. Everything's fine. So you, at least you got a month, you know, to know. You've had a. It's nice to have a month for one thing, especially if you're already in camp, like you said. But 2013 has been a strange year for you for your professional debut. But man, like you said, Mayweather Boxing Club, the Alexander Broner camps. Talk about, you know, the other camps, not just the Mayweather, but all the other training camps and camps that you've been through, and just the great work that you must have had. Because, yeah, you didn't get to make your pro debut, but you still managed to get a lot of good work in.
It was good. You know, it was a good learning experience, training with a world champion, and just getting that good work in and being part of their victory, because I helped them get ready for their fight. It was my job to help them get ready. So my statement was made to seeing them win their fight. So I did what I had to do. They did what they had to do. And shout out to all the guys that brought me in their camp and showed me mad love. As far as Adrian Broner, Devin Alexander, Carlos Molina, Floyd Mayweather, everybody, you know. Shout out to all.
Yeah,
them.
Man.
Actually getting I'm not getting them ready, but I'm doing some rounds with Carlos Molina from Chicago.
Yep.
You know, and so he's getting ready to fight with my big brother Ishae Smith and
mm-hmm.
under the Floyd Mayweather and Canelo undercard, you know, and that should be a good fight night too.
That's for sure, man. That's a good look, man. So, yeah, I mean, at least you got some work in, and it is what it is. You signed a new 3-year management deal. You're all ready to go. So, you know, you've been working with Nate Jones for a good, you know, portion of it. Right now, though, aren't you working with the new trainer for this fight? Because Nate is in Vegas right now. Who are you working with right now, Samaje?
With Jeff Mason.
Okay.
No, as a professional, he retired as 15-0. He fought Oscar De La Hoya in the amateurs, and you know, he's a real technical trainer, and he's real strict on how you throw your shots, how you land your shots, your feet movement. You know, he's one of the greats. I've been working with him throughout just as long as I've been working with Nate, and I won all my nationals with him and Nate training. He's my assistant trainer, and you know, yeah. So I'm real comfortable working with him. So that's why when Nate's out there helping Floyd get ready for the Canelo fight, Jeff get me groomed for this fight. So you know, our discussion is gonna be action packed. I'm gonna put on a excitement show. I'm in tremendous shape. And I'm ready to let my hands go. And I'm going to put on a great show for all the fans and everybody that love the sport of boxing. Because boxing is not dead. Boxing is alive. And boxing is better live.
That's for sure, man. So make sure you go to Cicero Stadium in Cicero, Illinois, Friday, August 30th. Samaje the Truth Thomas. And that's nice that you have that a guy around that you've been working with. And that's a nice combination to be able to go back and forth, because you know that he's going to be in Floyd's, you know, camp maybe twice a year now. So that's a good look, Samaje. That's a very good look. Why don't you go ahead and give a message to the fans and you know, see where they can follow you on Twitter and Facebook and of course, the website, SamajeThomas.net. Talk about, you know, give a message to the fans out there, man.
To all my fans, I want to thank you all for all your support and all your encouragement words. And I'm winning, and I'm boxing, and I'm doing all this for us. And, everyone can follow me on Facebook at Samaje Thomas, SamajeThomas, Instagram, Samaje_Thomas1, Twitter, Samaje Thomas. And one more thing, I founded a record label.
Okay.
Legendary Greatness Entertainment. And I founded it because with everyone in my circle, they want to become and they want to become legends at what they admire and what they love to do. And with every legend, there's greatness, and greatness is given by God. So we got LGNT, it's Legendary Greatness Entertainment.
Okay.
And you know, I'm the CEO. We have Kiel Willingham. He's the president. And that's my big cousin, and we kind of do mix it up a little bit with the, as far as the music side. We got a lot of good music, you know, and you know, it's just fun, just living life.
Yeah, Legendary Greatness Entertainment. Perfect. All right, Samaje. Well, good luck, man. Coming up not this Friday, but next Friday, we'll definitely have you back on to see how it went. Okay, buddy.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, take it easy.
Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. All right, guys, plenty of video on YouTube. If you haven't seen Samaje, you know, he was a top amateur. He's been in camps with Floyd Mayweather, you know, went on a couple running sessions with, you know, Floyd runs alone a lot of times. So, you know, he went on a run with him. He was in the Devin Alexander camp, Carlos Molina, Adrian Broner. He's working with Molina right now, so, I mean, wow. I mean, the guy, yeah, he had a pro debut issue, but that's okay. That's all right. I mean, it is what it is. It was a real shaky thing what the commission came up with, I'll tell you that. But he got past it, and like I said, yeah, he didn't get his pro. He should be probably on three or four, but, you know, at least he stayed busy and he was in camps. I mean, he was in a lot of camps. So, but either way, definitely check out Samaje Thomas coming up August 30th in SamajeThomas.net and follow him on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You heard all that. Well, let's get into this recap. You know, I started talking about the Kovalev fight. We'll get into Gil Barker as well. Of course, you know, the Martinez, man, Martinez came on like crazy against Romero. We'll talk all about that. I'm going to get the callers. I'm just going to go in order. So, Holly Hood, I see you. Steven, I see you. But CT's been here from the start, so I got to go to him. CT, man, first and foremost, how you doing, buddy?
I'm pretty good, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm doing real good, actually. So, man, we had ourselves a fight weekend on Friday, on Saturday, and then we even got some Monday. Not Monday Night Football, but Monday Night Boxing, which Danny Jacobs just blew the roof off with that KO. Very surprising early KO with that left hook and then the right hook that ended it. Let's go to, you know, let's first go to the UK. Nathan Cleverley, both of you, you know, you and I were on the same page when it comes to this fight. But still, you know, a couple of good right hands, a couple of jabs, maybe jab in the first round. But that's about it for Cleverley. Next thing you know, he was getting hit to the body. He was getting hit to the head. He had his guard up, and the left hooks were sneaking behind that glove. I mean, wow, Sergey Kovalev, man, he looked great. I mean, we both thought a lot of people thought he'd get the knockout. But to do it in this dominating fashion, what do you think, man?
Yeah, I mean, I picked him in 5 last week, but he was definitely dominating from the beginning. And I think what makes him special as a puncher is he's pretty good with his feet, and he's really good at closing distance and maintaining his shots and his punch output. I think I was saying, like, the key for Cleverley to do, even though it's out of his nature, but just to try to use the jab and try to turn Kovalev, you know, give him different looks. He kind of stood right in front of Kovalev, and that's bad. That's bad news for any type of light heavyweight, standing in front of a puncher like that. I think Kovalev, he's very good at what he does, but I think he needs to pace himself a little bit. You know, if you went to somebody like Bernard Hopkins, I would love to see them fight. Or either the one out of Dallas Stevenson versus Cloud. I think that'll be interesting for Kovalev. But I think somebody like Bernard Hopkins, it'll be interesting because Kovalev has very good punch volume, you know, and we all know Bernard Hopkins has trouble with that, but Bernard is so tricky and clever. I would love to see them two fight as well, but going into this fight, I think cleverly he felt Kovalev's power early, and for some reason it was like a deer in headlights. Just stood right in front of him, tried to throw a jab, and he actually landed some right hands, but I'm with you. I didn't see Kovalev getting tired at all. I don't think he was gassing at all. I think he was just, you know, turning it up, and he caught those two combination punches, and he throws a really good combination. He's very heavy-handed, so I think that makes him special as a puncher, too. Not a lot of punchers throw good combinations. It's kind of just one, you know, one-shot hitters, and I think he's a very good fighter. I would like to see who he fights next, but I think it's a very impressive win for him. I'd like to see who he fights next, though. So.
Yeah, it's a good point, and he lived up to it, like you said. He's not he's a guy that doesn't throw, I mean, I say he doesn't throw a lot of punches, but, I mean, he threw like 90-some in the first round, but overall he doesn't constantly throw, but he's not trying to throw, like you said, big punchers. A lot of times will try to just settle for one big punch. In fact, Curtis Stevens has shown that throughout his career, just one punch at a time, because he relies on just that, whereas, you know, we talked about his distance. We talked about his in-and-out capability and just getting off his shots and then getting off his shots, but still patient, not just throwing just wide, wide shots. And, you know, this is nothing new. And, Steven, I'm about to go to you here in just a second. This is nothing new with HBO, but for Max and Roy, I mean, maybe his mouth is open a little bit. Okay, but to say that his punches are losing the sting already, it's like, well, why isn't, you know, people are like, why didn't Cleverly use his work rate? Well, it's hard to throw punches, dude, when you're getting hurt and hit a lot. When some guy's throwing 80 and 90 punches at you and 30 some of them are landing, and they're all landing, I mean, his face was red early. And like I said, I gave him a little credit. He threw jabs in the first. He definitely, you know, landed some jabs in the first, and he actually landed a couple good right hands in the second. But it's just funny how they're like, yeah, I mean, he's already gassed. Like, besides a couple right hands, he's basically spent. And then that round is when he knocked him out. So it was crazy. You know, a left hook basically woke him up. You know, it was like, oh, you're done. You know, after that left hook, it wasn't the one that finished him, but when they just said it, and like 20 seconds later, a left hook just hurt him really bad, and there was the legs were gone, and you saw when the ref waved it off, he could have waved it off after the third, really. I mean, that body shot dropped him. He ran him into the ref. I mean, it was ugly. It was ugly, no doubt about it. But you know what? Kovalev, wow. I mean, this guy, he made the right decision, something we'll talk about in the second hour as well. You know, when Charles J. calls in, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, was he going to take Cleverly? Was it going to be B-Hop and Cleverly? Was it going to be B-Hop and Kovalev? Because Kovalev, you know, was the IBF after Murat. Had visa issues. He was the IBF. Obviously, he made the better choice. He made some solid money. He got on HBO, and it was a weaker fight. You know, it was a much weaker opponent, and it turns out it worked out good for him, because now the B-Hop fight might be there, but if it's not, he's on HBO now. You know what I mean? And they're already trying to, although they're going to need some step-aside money for Tony Bellew. Because Tony Bellew actually he's in line to fight the winner of Tavoris Cloud and Stevenson. So we can't just jump right to Kovalev. But they could bring in someone in there, you know, to fight, no doubt about it. I wouldn't doubt if they try to throw some money at Fonfara, to be honest with you, do it right in Chicago. That'd be interesting right there. I mean, that might work. I mean, you do it. Obviously, they can't do it outdoors unless they wait until next, you know, I don't think they'll wait that long. But either way, what a performance. Steven, man, how you doing, buddy? How's your summer going, man? It's been a while since we talked.
Hey, man, it's going pretty good. Been a busy summer, but going really well. How are things going for you, Chris?
You know, I had a great summer. I had a great summer. It's not over. You know, us Midwesterns, we got to hold on. The temperature-wise, the next week looks like it's definitely not over. But I've had a great summer, man. Going to Sweden for a couple weeks was great. And, you know, we've had some sneaky action. You know, it hasn't, you know, ever since sometime in July, it kind of fell off like boxing does. But we've had an okay August, and this last weekend was great. And now this last weekend really started. You know, I looked at the schedule, and it's only, not this coming weekend, but the weekend after. It kind of falls off a little bit, of course. But then, I mean, it has a string where there's only about two or three off weekends until December. So, I mean, we're about to start a night, you know, much how we had the March, April, and May and June. Well, we're about to get into that run again. So I'm really pumped up. We had a great HBO triple header. What did you think of Sergey Kovalev just taking it too cleverly? A guy that obviously was overrated. He had a belt for 2.5 years and hadn't really fought any top guys. And I thought he lost to Tony Bello. I thought he totally lost that fight. But either way, man, what a performance for your first time on HBO to score a knockout like that.
Yeah, man, that's you know, that's what you have to do, and with as fickle as boxing is, you know, when you get that chance, you better make it count, and he sure did. You know, I'll be honest with you, with Cleverly, now Kovalev, I've seen him fight before, but with Cleverly, I don't know that I'd seen him or much of him anyway. I'd heard a lot about him, and I thought he was supposed to be something. You know, I thought he was supposed to be fairly decent. And I mean, it almost looked like a mismatch to me. You know, right from the beginning, I mean, it just seemed like I don't know if Kovalev has those punches like Golovkin where they're just, you know, maybe they don't look that vicious, but they're just hard, hard thudding shots every time he throws something. And it looked like he had Cleverly, you know, kind of scared of getting hit, you know, pretty early on. I mean, he didn't want it. He did not want any more. And it was early that he started feeling that way. At least it looked like to me. So I was pretty impressed. I mean, it looked like he was using some good boxing technique, but at the same time, he just landed such hard shots and I mean, just really a mismatch to me. Pretty brutal. I mean, this guy's tough. I think he's legit.
Yeah, and I mean, word out of the UK, you know, and those who believed in Cleverly really thought that he was the next guy, you know. It's just his level of competition, it wasn't horrible, because at least he's fought some guys that you've heard of. But, if he was just at 26 fights, you'd start to go, okay, you need to step it up. At least he's fought guys that are ranked, but they haven't had good wins, you know. Even Tony Bellew, who's the mandatory for Cloud and Stevenson winner, he put himself in there. But, you know, he is also coming off a bad performance before the fight. He had to rematch the fight just to get into that situation. So, and like I said, I thought Tony beat him. I thought he lost that fight, and, you know, I don't know. It's one of those things that, you know, you can look good against so-so competition, but once you have a belt for 2.5 years, you got to fight somebody. And it's not like to face those two guys, you know, before your 20th, 24th, 20th fight, whatever, right in there, it's not that it was just horrible, but when you have a belt that long – you know, it seemed like after that Bellew fight, they slowed him down. And you can't slow down a champion, you know what I mean? So it's one thing to lose your belt and then slow you down and get back to the basics or whatever. But or maybe you were winning the fight, you knocked him down, you got him hurt, and you just got, you know, careless in there or something like that. That's a different story. But to me, they just slowed him down. And he's in front of these guys swinging and throwing all these, you know, accurate combinations, and he's got these long arms, and, you know, he's put on some fun fights to watch, I'll say that, but I don't know. I just didn't believe it. You know, the last couple of years, he was protected over there, and he can only protect so much with a belt. You know what I mean? I don't know, man. It is what it is, but, you know, that's how it goes, and he's not the first guy protective. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, I mean, you're right. The talk was he was going to, you know, he was going to do something here. Steven, man, what did you think about Daniel Gill and Darren Barker? Obviously, this was the fight of the night. You know, it was back and forth. Barker got off to the lead. Then Gill started getting it back. Then the sixth round, I mean, that right hand that bounced off the top of his head and then the left hook to the body, the way he went down, Steven, it looked bad. It looked like he wasn't getting up. And he did that little hesitation where he put his head down on the mat, and I thought, oh, he's done, you know. But it was really just try to stretch, you know, move his body a little around to try to get some air because he said he couldn't breathe. He got up in the eighth and the ninth and the tenth. You know, he really started closing. I gave him the eighth, ninth, and tenth in the 11th, I think. Yep. And, I mean, the guy closed. I mean, the 11th round or 12th round, you could say, you know, it was Gill. But, one, what did you think of the fight? It was a great two-way fight. And maybe you had it for Daniel Gill. I mean, it was a tight fight. It could have went either way. And obviously, when you score the knockdown and hurt a guy like he hurt him, you know, I don't blame anybody for thinking that, you know, Daniel Gill won the fight. What'd you think of the fight itself? Break it down for us. And then how'd you score it? I mean, who'd you think came out on top on that one? Because it was a good tight fight.
Yeah, I did. It really went down to the last couple rounds. I mean, it, and honestly, I don't think, you know, I don't know that I would have been upset, you know, either way with the decision. It was a good fight. What I was, again, you know, I've heard a lot about, but probably haven't seen too much of. You know, my experience with Barker is not great, but I have seen a couple times. And quite honestly, as tough as he fought against Sergio, or as tough a time as Sergio had with him, I wasn't surprised to see him, you know, do so well against a guy that you know was supposed to beat him. You know, it's unfortunate for Gill that, you know, he gets on there and you know, he doesn't do what he's supposed to do. But you know, like I said, I wouldn't have been upset either way with that fight. I'll tell you what I really like, Chris, and what I'm starting to see, and you know, I don't know how you feel about this, but this whole situation with the Golden Boy guys and let's say the bigger name guys going over to Showtime, HBO. And Saturday was a pretty good example, but there's been others. We're seeing some guys and some fights that we might not have gotten to see. You know, had things not shifted around, had the balance of power or whatever you want to, however you want to look at it, had that not shifted a little bit, I don't know that we'd be seeing these guys. And for me, I think it's all good things. You know, I love getting to see these guys that, you know, I hear about, I read about, I can watch a YouTube video, you know what I mean? But, you know, it's, you know, I'm not going to see these guys on TV on a very regular basis. So it's really nice to see them, you know, on HBO. And I have to think that this whole situation, this whole power shift is kind of what's caused it. And, you know, it's nice. I guess it's free HBO up to kind of go after some of these guys and to spotlight some of these guys. And man, you know, it was just, I don't know. I think this year has been a great year for us as boxing fans. I think we've been winners. You know, that we can't say that every year. We can't say that very often, you know, really at all. But I think this year we've been winners. We were winners with the string of fights that we were having earlier that you kind of alluded to. The spring fights, they were great. And now, you know, we're getting into to some fall fights. And, you know, I understand that maybe, you know, had you ran down that list of those six names that fought Saturday night to a very casual fan, it may not have meant much. But to me, who, you know, I'm sure I don't watch the amount of boxing that you watch, Chris. I know I don't. I serve too many masters. But I still, you know, I know those names and am very intrigued when I see a triple header with the guys, you know, with the guys they had on there. I mean, I'm thinking, wow, this is great. This is good for boxing. This is good for boxing because Floyd Mayweather can't fight forever. You know, these guys can't fight forever. And they got, we have to have some new blood. There has to be new blood, and there has to be, you know, and so I, like I said, I think we kind of came out to the good this weekend with Saturday night and also on Friday night fights. Man, I mean, you know what I mean? That's the ESPN put on a good show, and someday I would love to go see one of their stadium shows. I just think that would be so cool, to go check out fights there. I'll be honest with you, I hadn't seen, or actually I don't even remember hearing about that first Spielka Mallo fight. I don't know, when was that, February or something like that?
Yeah, February, yeah.
I'm not sure how I missed that or how I missed out on that, how I didn't hear about it or read about it.
Well, I mean, it was in January and February when it was kind of, you know, on the low. So maybe that's why.
And man, and then so getting to see that, and then, of course, I had you fired up for the second fight. And honestly, it almost second fight almost looked like a carbon copy of their first one. You know, that Mallo guy, he's tough. He's very, very tough. But like they always say, skills pay the bills. And that Spielka just a little too slick for him, and he caught him again. Hey, it was a good weekend, man. And just I don't know. Like I said, it's not something like, you know, I go to work and some of the guys there, they don't know boxing, but they at least know some of the names either from hearing me talk or seeing them
right.
in the news. So it's a week, one of those weekends where I can't go in Monday and be like, oh man, you know, this and this, because they're gonna stop listening within, you know, 45 seconds and be talking,
right.
But they're not hearing any names that they've heard of. But for me as a fight fan, man, you know, I'm stoked after a weekend like that because, you know, hey man, this is great. This is great. We're seeing guys. I'm seeing guys that I don't get to see. It's awesome.
I agree, and you made a great point because obviously it's something HBO should have done a while ago, and not having to showcase fights per se. You know, and even with a triple header, I was saying Showtime triple header, one, they have them a lot more, and they're just better, you know. But this one right here, this year, in fact, and a little last year, I have to say, they're starting to get the triple headers figured out, and you know, like you said, maybe not the big names, and maybe there's belts, maybe there's not, but it's still just good matchups, and you know the July 20, what was it, 27th or 28th, the Soto Cross Berto and those fights. Again, two unbeaten prospects basically figuring out who's going to be a contender in the Chavez Thurman fight. You know, names that, you know, Figueroa, yeah, it was for a belt, but, you know, a lot of people hadn't seen the Japanese fighter. That turned out to be a great fight. A lot of these fights, people have dogged. You know, the Berto Soto Cross, people are like, oh, Berto's getting served Soto Cross. Maidana just beat him not too long ago. It's going to be, you know, this, that, and the other. Same with the Provokhnikov. Bradley fight. Oh, Bradley's, it's in there easy. It's a waste of money. But sometimes the matchups are what it's all about. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, this is what they got to do. Obviously, they're going to come around to Golden Boy. You have to. They have too much talent. But that's the one thing about the guy who's in charge now, Ken Hirschman. Is it a smart decision? Could he have done it a little bit differently? Yeah, he could have done it differently. Same with the Broner-Malignaggi fight. People thought, oh, that's weak. It was a 7-5 fight and a good fight, you know. HBO didn't buy that. They had a chance to buy it. They didn't buy it. So they're going to come around to that. They better if they have it, you know, any sense. But the last handful of years, Showtime's been kicking HBO's butt. And part of that, right, I mean, yeah, now Espinoza's coming close to his second year there, and the ratings are up 50%, and now Golden Boy's really going hard. But before that, they were still kicking their butt as far as maybe not, you know, 50% ratings, but they were the ratings were climbing, and they were just putting on a better product. And Ken Hirschman was the guy working with the littler budget. It's still a smaller budget, but it's a lot more even now than it was. And Hirschman was the guy making it work instead of just building careers. That's the difference. And so I got to give it to Hirschman. And, you know, he's put on – they keep calling him HBO Boxing After Dark, and that's awesome. But when there's three championship belts on the line like there was early June, at some point you got to say, dude, it's championship boxing. You know, obviously the ratings – It's a ratings game, and I get it. You know, you obviously, if you can bring up the HBO Boxing After Dark, that's supposed to be your guys on the, you know, part of that category does fit guys on the rise. But when you have so many championship fights on there, to me, it's not a prospect going against a contender or two prospects making a contender. It's just a little different, but you can call it whatever the hell you want. I just want good fights. But I think it's a smart move by Hirschman, because now his ratings are really solid, whereas HBO After Dark was slipping. It was slipping along with their championship boxing, but the last couple of years it had improved. But either way, yeah, man, what a great fight and what a great weekend. You know, props to HBO, FS1 on Monday night, and then, you know, of course, Friday night fights. CT, man, you know, going into this fight, Daniel Gill, Darren Barker, 50-50 fight. Barker was, you know, I made a little money on Barker on because he was a slight underdog. And this was a 50-50 fight. And guess what? It turned out to be a 50-50 fight. How'd you see, you know, break this fight down from your perspective? And, you know, maybe you thought Gill won or it was a draw. I mean, I'm not sitting there saying that Barker – nobody dominated, and if anybody says that Daniel Gill got robbed, how do you get robbed when, one, it's a tight fight, and two, it's a split decision, you know? So I know there's, on that one card that was 114-113, I think that's the big one, because that card, the 12th round went to Barker on that card, and I didn't give 12th round to Barker either, so I could understand when people thought, well, Gill probably won in my eyes. What'd you think of the fight? What'd you think of Darren Barker getting up from that left hook to the body? And overall, how'd you score it, man?
Going into the fight last week, I know I favored Gill because of the style matchup. But Barker surprised me how fast he started. And he was more aggressive than I thought. You know what I mean? Against Martinez, he was kind of countering on Martinez's punches, you know, being a little bit too passive. But versus Gill, he kind of forced the issue. It was very, very close. I might have gave the edge. It's one of those fights where, you know, you see a knockdown. You see, you know, both guys had great output throughout the fight, both guys. To me, I think Boston got hurt a little bit more through the fight. I mean, but he landed more shots, threw more punches, surprisingly. I think he just wanted it more. And but some of his shots were more telling. I mean, I know it kind of doesn't make sense what I just said, but Gill, you know, Gill fought his type of fight to an extent. But I think what surprised Gill is how Barker came out aggressively, you know, forcing the issue. I don't think he planned on that. So, you know, Barker made adjustments. I would like to see a rematch.
Yeah.
It was very, very close. It could have gone either way. Or they could have, like, you know, Barker versus Murray. I think that would be an interesting fight. It would be a big fight in the UK. So, you know, if you can't do a rematch, make a Barker and Murray fight. I think that'll be interesting. But the fight was very, very close. I watched it twice. The first time I watched it, I gave it to Gill, but then the second time I watched it, I gave it to Barker. So I don't know. It's one of those fights where it can go either way. Plus, that knockdown, he showed a lot of grit because not a lot of guys would have got up from that shot. It was perfect.
Yeah. And did you get a chance to see that Jonathan Romero, Kiko Martinez, man? Romero was the guy at 122 who they were grooming, HBO, of course, grooming us for rigging the owl. Well, Kiko wasn't having any of that. Did you get a chance to see that fight, man?
Yeah, that I was really impressed with Kiko Martinez. You know what that fight kind of reminded me of? The Brandon Rios versus Miguel Costa
fight.
Yeah,
Costa,
I think
yeah.
It kind of resembled, yeah, exactly. But to me, it kind of looked like a man in there with a boy because Kiko Martinez forced the issue from the beginning, and he was nonstop pressure. I mean, the middle rounds, I think it was like the second or third, you saw Romero, get a little swing through the fight. He was landing his shots from the outside, but once Martinez got on the inside, he just made his punches work. He was very strong. He looked very strong in this fight. I would love to see if Leo Santa Cruz can win this weekend. I would love to see him fight Kiko Martinez. I think that'll be a war.
Jeez. Man, they'd need like a 6-month vacation after that fight because those two dudes, they would probably headbutt each other on the way in too so much. Man, that's a good call, dude. See, I love when we start to matchmake. We always matchmake here at Ropadope Radio, and man, I'll pay for pay-per-view on that one, dude. I'll pay for pay-per-view on that one. That would be a good one because, a lot of people want to see the Santa Cruz Mares. I want to see it. I'm not saying I don't want to see it, but they're not at the same weight class, for one. Not just yet. Don't get me wrong. Santa Cruz is bigger than Abner, so he can go to 126. He'll be okay. But, Leo's actually on weight already as of a couple days ago. So, he was having problems with 118. 122, I think he should fit in there. Rigging Diao actually – he has, I think it's two fights left with Bob Arum. That's an opportunity. Plus, he could get some fights overseas as well. Maybe not going there, but, maybe he could get on a pay-per-view undercard or a big fight in L.A. or something like that. There are guys at 122 that still could do some things for him. Is it, even Moreno. Moreno, I think that's a good fight because that we saw – last December when he fought a boxer, an unexperienced, like a 16-0 boxer, who didn't have a lot of power, he gave Santa Cruz some issues early. So, but just breaking down that fight, and we're in the second hour here. If you're just joining in, I see a couple callers, regulars calling in here. We had Samaje Thomas on. He's got a fight August 30th. He was in the Broner camp, Alexander camp, Carlos Molina camp. Mayweather camp. He had a little pro debut issue in March, some real random issue, really. But he got over it, and he got some work in, like I mentioned to him. But breaking down this Gil Barker fight, like I said, I won some money this weekend because I did pick Barker on the show, and I also picked him just because of the underdog. It's a 50-50 fight. In a 50-50 fight, I'm putting a little money on the underdog. That's just how I do it. I think I'm very confident. But I wasn't very confident in Daniel Gill. And I did pick Barker, and I thought, okay, I'm going to put a little money on him. I won a little money. And then the KO, not that I won a ton of money on the Kovalev KO, but I definitely did. I almost picked the fifth round because that was like fifth and sixth were like the last big odds. Of course, the first through four, one through four are always going to be pretty big odds because, it is what it is, a championship fight. But I almost picked the fifth, so I'm glad I didn't. Obviously you can get better odds when you pick individual rounds, but I didn't know. I thought maybe he could last to the sixth or something like that. But either way, so I made a little money this weekend. I thought Barker – I had seen enough against Sergio Martinez. Yeah, he got TKO'd. He started getting, it was a TKO legitimately. He was getting hit clean by the end of that fight. But the first 6-7 rounds, he was coming forward but patient. He definitely had a big work right here, like you mentioned, CT. And I just saw enough. And I saw enough where he was adapting and sometimes countering and beating you know, Martinez to the punch now, you know. I mean, Martinez adapted like he does and won the fight. You know, I'm not saying that, oh, if there's a rematch or nothing like that, but to me, I just didn't think Daniel Gill could be as awkward, you know, as Sergio Martinez. And the knockdown actually definitely surprised me. You know, it definitely surprised me. And I just think there's a lot of wasted movement in Daniel Gill's style. But he, just getting into it, I mean, great opening round. You know, there's no feeling out. They just got right to it. A good overhand right landed, that's for sure. You know, Gill was active, though. He was still active. In the second round, I thought a stiff jab in the straight rights. Just overall, you know, he actually countered him a couple times as well, got his left hook in. I thought that he won the second round, third round. You could start to see Gill was trying to be busy, but he actually was reaching. He was missing and getting countered. And right then and there, I thought, I mean, he still landed some combos and stuff, but right there I thought, wow, this, not that this was going to get ugly, but I thought, yeah, Barker's got his number right now, and I don't see him. I see him winning rounds, but I think Barker's going to, you know, he's going to win this fight. I was very confident at that point, just watching it. But then Gill responded in the fourth round with his best round. He just went on the attack, you know. Barker did land some early, but, you know, Gill just was busier. He was throwing combinations, and like I said, he came back. And even though Barker definitely landed a flush right hand, and, you know, he got hit back hard after it. So it was kind of a back and forth, you know what I mean? Barker did actually, in that fourth round, you know, snap with an uppercut, I believe it was, snap Gill's head back. But really a great round for Gill. Same with the fifth round. He was just busier. I thought his best round, by, you know, the fourth was his best round of the fight so far, but the fifth, he came back and he was busier, but this time it seemed like he was landed a lot bigger. Sixth round, and obviously he was, because in that sixth round, they were talking about it on the broadcast, you could see some swelling around Barker's eyes. And you're thinking, huh, okay, wow. But, I mean, that first of all, you know, it was the left hand of the body dropped him, but it was after right hand, that landed on the top of his head. So, You know the ear shots, the behind the ear, top of the head, that's, you know, the equilibrium thing. That's no joke. I mean, I'm not going to say week in and week out, but damn near week in and week out. For sure, that every couple weeks we see a big fight. This changes the tone. So he got hit with that big right hand, then the left hook to the body. And when he went down, it didn't look good. And when he rested, he was down. You could see he was in pain. But then when he kind of put his head on the canvas, I was like, oh, he's done. He's done for sure. What a great knockout. And he beat the count just barely. And we know the UK, you know, not long ago, that fight over there, you know, and you know, that he got up before the 10 count. And this time, I mean, he snuck out. He snuck the 9, 10, you know, it was almost 10. He got up, though. And he, you know, he was starting to get hurt again. But near the end, he did land some good punches, enough to where you're thinking the ref made a good call. Now, the seventh round, the first 2 minutes, Gill. You know, because obviously, you know, Barker was still hurt. But the last 60 seconds, man, big, big shots by Barker. Very big shots. And right then and there, I knew he was pretty much back. And that, I'm not going to call that a 10-10 round. I gave it to Gill, but that was a good round. That was a good round. I think that, you know, both fighters were hurt in the fight, but CT, you do make a point. I mean, in the 12th round, it seemed like Barker got hurt as well, you know, in that 12th round. So, I don't know. It's a tough one. I want to watch it again and score it again, no doubt about it. I think the eighth round was the best two-way round where both guys got off, but Barker closed it again. Another two-way round in the ninth, but once again, he finished stronger. And it really, I thought the ninth round was the best round since the last round he won. You know, he started getting stronger. And I think that was the key. Tight, competitive rounds, but he would close the round out. And you'd think right when the round's done, you're like, yeah, that's a Barker round. And I think that happened, you know, let me check my scorecard, the 8th, 9th, 10th, in the 11th, I think that happened. In the 10th, though, I mean, combinations, clean shots, uppercuts. I mean, Gill took a lot of punishment. A lot of punishment. Some 3-4 punch combos to the body. I mean, it was that 10th round, it looked like Gill was in trouble. Great two-way round once again. Great, I mean, exchanges all the way to the close of that round. I did give the 11th to Barker. Gill, I thought, was busier, and I thought he landed bigger in that 12th round, though. And like I said, I mean, he may have got buzzed again in that 12th round. I mean, that may have happened. That may have happened. So, I mean, what a great fight I had. So I had it 7-5, 114-113 because of the knockdown. There's got to be a swing round or two in there. You know, I'm assuming, like I said, I mentioned one of them because I have a little note. Every once in a while, I'll do 10-10 just straight up, or I'll do 10-10 and put like a little note that if you basically put a gun to my head and I had to make a decision, I'll pick, you know. So I gave Gill the 7th, but I thought it was a close round. And I know there was other close rounds because when I say it's a two-way round, it's one of those rounds that maybe you got to watch again. So I'm looking forward to watching this fight again. The Jonathan Romero fight, though, against Kiko Martinez for the 122 title. Romero, like I mentioned, was being groomed, you know, trying to get something going for Rigan Diao. I mean, right off the bat, just amazing body work. I mean, a left hook hurt him bad, and he buzzed him early and late. I mean, the way Kiko came out and attacked the body, he had him on the ropes right away and just started bombing on the hooks, And it was bad news. You know, but then I thought in the second round Romero got his jab going and got his movement. And, I mean, Martinez did close that round, and maybe he landed, you know, the bigger shot of the round. But it was a tight round in the second round. The third round, wicked uppercut early by Romero. Good tight round. I thought then Kiko once again closed the gap. Right hooks started landing. I mean, early in the round, the jabbing and the movement. But then all of a sudden, you know, he would grit it out. He would get close to him and just start landing hard and really hard, too. I'm talking really, really hard. So, you know, Martinez, you know, Romero, a couple of times in that fight was hurt and buzzed. And he would get hurt, buzzed, kind of walk away and try to get away from the punches and then kind of recoup. And then all of a sudden, boom, you know, he would be back in there. So I got to give him credit just because, I mean, he may have been out on his feet a couple times in that fight. You know, he may have. He might have been. But either way, 6-round TKO. Two huge right hands landed. I mean, Romero was taking a lot of shots. And he somehow fought back in a lot of it. But he was just, when he fought back, it would expose him more to the incoming punches. And like I said, the hooks with both hands. I mean, he averaged almost 90 punches around. I mean, it was awesome because at the interview, he was just so delighted. You know, he said, Michael Buffer said my name, you know, as a champion. And it was refreshing. Kiko Martinez, you know, Carl Frampton TKO'd him in one of his last fights. So to come back and get this win, What a great, great fight, man. What a great two-way fight. Obviously, pretty much one-sided. But I got to, you know, Romero fought hard considering. And they basically, when he was on the row in the corner, you know, he was stuck in that corner, and you could see the blood in his mouth. He was taking a lot of shots, and when they stopped it with that TKO, it was a good stoppage. I mean, even, you know, Jonathan Romero was shaking his head like, yeah, I'm glad they stopped. Thank you, ref, you know? So, yeah, lots to talk about still with the Friday Night Fights card. But right about now, we're going to go ahead and bring in Charles J. And see what he thinks about this HBO triple header, man. One of the best, you know, very solid triple header, Charles. And HBO, I'd say this is their best triple header in a while, but especially for sure this year. What do you think of the action, man? We'll start with Daniel Gill and Darren Barker right off the bat.
Well, on an overall basis, Chris, I think that, you know, this is, I guess, Evan, I don't know what their rating was for the fight. You probably know a little bit more about that than I do, if they've come out with numbers, but from a quality standpoint, this was evidence that, you know, throw out the, you know, put the big names, so to speak, on the shelf and talk about putting together some matchups, and maybe you get better results, at least from an aesthetic standpoint for fans, you know. Because, you know, God, for years I've been hearing people complain. I mean, people from within the business about, you know, which fighters get a free ride with HBO and that they're, you know, putting one guy in a lay down in order to get to a bigger fight with a promoter with a bigger fighter and so on and so forth. Here it looked like, you know, see, either that or they got lucky with some good, you know, with some good action. And, yeah, I think they wound up with at least two guys that they can build a little bit with in the future, maybe turn into stars, TV stars, that is, you know, for boxing. I don't know if they got that out of the main event, or so-called main event on this show. You know, Barker and Gill were two pretty good middleweights. I don't think either one of those guys were going to be contenders for any pound-for-pound lists, or I don't think that they were going to be mentioned in the same breath as a Sergio Martinez or a Gennady Golovkin. And in fact, Martinez had already beaten Barker in one of his title defenses. But it made for a good matchup because Gill is a guy who had a title belt, but really was in about the same class as Barker, and so Barker was going to have a better chance with him. His dimensions were a little bit more favorable going up against Gill, and neither guy was really a big knockout puncher. Yet they did not have all the defense in the world. So you saw a lot of punches, you know, thrown and landed, and they were busy. And I think some of that was mentioned during the fight. The fact that they didn't really have heavy hands contributed to the fact that, you know, some of this action was extended the whole distance instead of ending at some point, although I'm sure we'll get to it in a second. It almost did end. But in the end, you had, I think, a gutty performance by both guys. I think they did enough, you know, both did enough to merit another look on HBO. And I, you know, agreed with the judges having Barker ahead at the end of the action.
Yeah, so did I. I mean, it's one of those fights that I think I could watch again and maybe, you know, swing around or whatever. But I didn't have it. I had it 7-5, and I thought you saw Barker just close rounds, even if they were two-way, great exchange, back and forth. Like you said, he seemed to close the round to where the last 60 seconds you thought, yeah, he won the round again, you know, especially in the championships round. Besides the 12th, you know, after that 6th and 7th, especially the 6th, the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th, when you win those four rounds, it's tough. You know, it's very tough. And for the people that say, you know, oh, Gill got robbed, well, first of all, it was a split decision, and it was a tight fight. It was a good competitive fight, so nobody can get robbed in that situation unless the scorecards are just crazy one way. What did you think about Barker somehow, some way getting up from that body shot? He got hit with the right hand on the top of the head and then the left hook. When he had his head on that canvas, Charles, I thought he was done.
I thought that that was one of the best comebacks within a fight that I've seen in recent years because, and you and I discussed this off air, getting floored with the body shock is one thing. But then looking like he might not beat the count of 10 and then finally getting up at the count of 9. Now, when you get up at the count of 9, you know, a referee is going to look at you and wonder if you can go forward. You know, you can keep going. And he's going to generally keep a closer eye on you. And then, you know, Barker went on to, like, not throw a punch. I think they said they had measured it at 45 seconds. I mean, he was covering up and all that. But Gill continued to throw a lot of punches, landed some of them, and Barker was not throwing back. Now, at that point in time, this referee would have been justified in stopping the fight. I don't think anybody would have really argued with him because that's like one of those unwritten rules in boxing. If you're hurt, you're knocked down, and you're starting to bring the referee into it in that kind of a way, you got to throw punches just to show him you're okay and you can go forward. And this guy did not do it. So if he had stepped in, because remember, you know, we had just seen that fight with Romero, which didn't even get close to being, you know, in that territory, okay? I mean, Martinez was a busy guy, but he didn't land. That meant, you know, he didn't, Romero wasn't not fighting back for that long a period of time as Barker was. So you could have said, hey, you know, this guy is justified in stopping the fight. Well, somehow he didn't do it, and Barker got his second win. He won early, and he won late, like you mentioned. You know, he won some of those early rounds, and then he won the late rounds after maybe letting Beal get even or get ahead in the fight. But I should say that, and I don't want this to sound like I'm saying the fight should have been stopped, but, you know, this referee did a horrible job, Eddie Cotton. And not because of that necessarily, but because of that call he made on the, you know, low blow, which was actually landed by Gill, but he warned Barker. And I don't know how that happened. And in fact, I'm going to be talking, I hope, later this week with my contact in the New Jersey Commission to ask if the Cotton's going to come under review for that, because you can't make mistakes like that. I don't think he penalized Barker for it, but let's say he had, you know, and let's say that had made the difference in the fight. You know, that's not even a judgment call. You know, I mean, that's something, all you have to do is look at a replay to see that he was very seriously in error. And right. I don't know, you see, it's not even a borderline thing where you even should look at the replay. I don't know where he got all that from. Where did he get that Barker, who wasn't even throwing at that point in time, and certainly not throwing anywhere near the body, had been the one that landed the low blow, especially when he was the one hunched over? Guys don't act all that well, okay?
Right.
And so right from that point, you had to wonder what in the world is going on here. Now, of course, letting the fight go on was kind of giving Barker the break there, so you can't really say he was in anyone's pocket, but it was just inconsistent officiating. And so you were just kind of happy that that didn't make the difference in the fight. You know, this was all the drama. This was the drama of the fight.
Yeah.
You know, how the guy came back literally almost virtually from the dead. I mean, from being about as close to being stopped as you can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it was close.
After being ahead in the fight, right, and then at that point, coming back even within the round itself, and then afterward, regain the momentum and the advantage and go on to win the fight, and then you know, of course, with all that backstory, and he revealed some of that in the ring after the fight, and Gil was good about it, and so it was just a good, it was a good experience. But don't make any mistake about it. I mean, Gil was, I'm not going to call him a paper champion, but you know, he was an Australian champion. You know, who was, steered to the thing, and certainly not what you would call an upper level champion. Certainly not someone on the order of a Martinez or a Golovkin. And I'm not sure that what we got out of this fight is a guy who the public would be clamoring for as a challenger for a Golovkin, for example. So, it was an entertaining fight. As far as being a meaningful fight on the world stage, less meaning than maybe another fight that was on that show, for example.
Right, and you know, you make a good point. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, he didn't take a point from him, but that's a warning. So if he goes and hits, if it's in his head that Barker did it, and then Barker hits low for the first time in the fight that he sees, that could have been the point. So it could have been a big difference. It's a big, big error that could have really done some damage, no doubt about it.
Could have done some damage, but you know what, Chris? Let's say that something like, and I know the guys in New Jersey well enough to know this. If that had been a difference maker, because remember, New Jersey is one of the few states, and I don't know if it isn't the only state right now, where you've got replay that you can use, right? So, when there is a review process, and the review process is fair, and if that had been a point, or 2 points or whatever, that it made the difference in the fight.
Right.
At least these guys would have had something to and somewhere to appeal, you know, and would have been able to make a case, and that may have made the sanctioning body act, in some way, because it would have been a clear, it's not even one of those things. It's almost like, if you had the Super Bowl and you had one team winning, and they won on a bad call, very directly,
Right.
And you could tell that was the difference maker. You could reverse a decision. I don't know if they would do that in New Jersey or not, but you would know that one thing made the difference. And there would have been, I would think, a little bit of justice there. And I probably should have, talked to these guys ahead of time, but I'm going to have some words with them to find out what, the woulda, shoulda, coulda. Part of this thing, because remember, they've been through this, this officiating problem in the not too distant past,
yeah,
when they had to go and review those judges in the Erislandi Lara Paul Williams fight, remember, and they suspended those judges. So these guys take action. They just don't sit on their ass and do nothing. And I think they would have been very, very concerned. Even with a longtime referee like Cotton, I mean, they would have been very concerned that there was an issue created by a clear error, a clear mistake, a clear gaffe on the part of an official. That's not even a judgment call. I mean, that's something that everybody could see.
Yeah, that was clear. That was definitely clear, and that could have been issues that night. And luckily, it didn't play in to it. Let's talk about the other two fights. Kiko Martinez taking it right to Jonathan Romero, a guy that was supposed to be, that was supposed to be an opponent. They were grooming him. HBO was grooming him for Rigging the Yao. And then Sergey Kovalev over Nathan Cleverly just destroyed him. What about those two fights, man?
Well, I've not seen Martinez before, and I think this was his first fight in the U.S., and the one thing you notice that when you look at Martinez's record is that, he was doing, when he was outside of Spain, he was going into some other guys' hometowns and fighting, or at least their home areas. He was going to South Africa. He went to the UK a couple of times and lost there. He was not necessarily afraid to travel and take a risk. And you mentioned the Carl Frampton fight, which he got beat. I mean, he's not... I don't, you know, where do you classify a guy like that? He's sort of like a Brandon Rios in a way, in that this guy's all action. You know, I'm watching this thing and I'm saying this guy is not giving Romero any time or any opportunity whatsoever to breathe and to relax and to sit down and get, you know, into his game plan. And, of course, Romero's game plan is to keep a distance between him and his opponent and work from the outside. And there was very little opportunity to do that because this guy got to him quick. You know, a lot of guys cut off a ring or say they're cutting off a ring or say that they're putting pressure on an opponent, but they come to the opponent relatively slowly. You know, I mean, they're coming forward, yes, but they're coming slowly. This guy came fast. I mean, this guy was not going, you know, he was not allowing this guy to really even keep a distance, set down, and throw punches. And he was making him fight 3 minutes of every round. And that sounds like a cliche. I mean, we use that term a lot in boxing. And, of course, yes, guys are in there for 3 minutes a round. But they don't fight for 3 minutes of every round. They don't work for 3 minutes of every round. And this guy, this guy was being forced to do it. And this is what the value of having Martinez in there was. Now, Martinez is not a great fighter by any means. You know, he is in many ways there to get hit. And he was hit. I mean, he was hit, you know, by Romero. And but not hard enough, obviously, to keep him off. And Romero, you know, I mean, he was, I think the guy he took the title from, was it the Lopez? It was not a puncher at all. I mean, you know, there was not. It was like a night and day thing. So he was not used to it, and really had not fought anybody when it comes down to it. Not too many. He had not fought a lot of good opposition. So. You know, this guy comes in and he's all action and he is 3 minutes around. And you'd be surprised, you know, when what real pressure will do to some of these guys who are not really interested in trading necessarily, but are interested in fighting at their pace and setting their own rhythm. He had no rhythm he could really get into in this fight. It was almost like he was always on the retreat. I think as we were talking about this earlier, you mentioned he was on the ropes an awful lot, you know, and Martinez was not letting up at all. And I like to see that kind of a thing. You know, you like to see a guy who's not only talks about being aggressive, but is aggressive. He got to him. He wasn't afraid to throw his hands. He was always throwing his hands. He wasn't posing. He wasn't waiting for the guy to throw punches so he could counter punch. He was in there. He was aggressive. You know, he's a good TV fighter. I think that HBO's discovered that, and I think you're going to see this kid with a lot of work, because win or lose, he's going to give you action. You know, he's certainly not, again, he's not an unbeatable fighter. He's been beaten. I'm sure he'll be beaten, and I'm sure that there will be other guys who have either enough power to be able to back him off or enough boxing ability to be able to perhaps befuddle him a little bit. But if you're not top shelf, you're probably going to have a very difficult time with him. And so, you know, you'll see this guy, you know, he goes in there, he's not a barroom brawler. He's a pretty sharp puncher. And, you know, he's got that kind of look where he's going to be very appealing to fans in the future. I would be very surprised if HBO didn't try to bring him back at the first opportunity.
I agree with you. And in what better way for Ricky Diaw to look, you know, exciting with a guy that is going to come right at him? You know what I mean? I don't know if he's going to want to fight him, but, I don't know. That would be a great opponent for him. That would be a great opponent for him because he's going to bring the fight out.
Yeah, it will. But I also think you're also moving off way up in class with something like that, too.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it may be a little bit of a different ball game for this kid. But the one thing you can assure yourself is he's not a kid that's going to go in there and get stage fright and he's going to stand there and let himself get hammered by a guy like Brigham Young. He will go after it, and he'll go out on his shield, you know, and that's the kind
right.
of thing you like to see from a TV fighter, you know. It's a guy that, again, using another cliche that would seem to have an obvious meaning, but, you know, has a different kind of meaning for boxing people. He's got good combinations. He's not afraid to throw, all right, meaning he will throw regardless.
That's for sure. And like you said, it is a step up in class, but if HBO wants excitement out of Brigham Diaw, they got to find guys that are going to come right to him and guys that are coming off a big win and an exciting guy because that will bring out, you know, his style. So they did it with Donito because Donaire had plenty of so-so fights, and it matters the opponent who he was in with too. So everyone kind of blames Brigham Diaw for that fight being slow, but Nonito, he outthrew Nonito. So, you know, neither guy was really working that hard, you know?
I would say, Chris, that, you know, if no matter how classy you are as a boxer, you know, I think we almost saw this happen in the Broner, you know, Malignaggi fight, in a sense, is that no matter how classy you are as a boxer, and I would regard Brigham Diaw as, you know, being pretty close to a top 10 pound-for-pound fighter, all right? And I'm obviously taking a couple of things into account here. One is the massive amateur record, which he beat a lot of world-class guys. Plus, the fact that, you know, you get to a pro title that quickly, and then you dominate a guy who is considered to be, you know, one of the better fighters in the world, you deserve to be there. Now, that having been said, no matter how good you are, no matter how classy you are, if you don't work hard enough, the guy who is working hard has a chance to beat you, and that's the classification that this kid is in, Martinez, is that he's going to work, you know? And if Brigham Diaw isn't busy enough or isn't forceful enough and doesn't back him off and change the character of the fight, you may see something interesting happen there.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. And then, you know, we talked a lot about this Kovalov, Sergey Kovalov going against Cleverly, B-Hop possibly getting the Cleverly fight, Kovalov versus B-Hop. You know, we talked a lot about this subject as these fights were being negotiated and talked about. Kovalov decided to go to Cleverly's hometown because he felt he could get the job done. He even admitted it, you know, into the presser coming up. That B-Hop obviously would have been a tougher fight, tougher style. But now he came on the scene. HBO, besides B-Hop, has a lot of the light heavyweight guys now. Not that it's a deep division, but they do have some guys in that division. What were your thoughts on Kovalov, you know, just ending it that quick and, you know, where he stands now in this light heavyweight division?
Well, I thought that it was, you know, he was given the opportunity to fight Hopkins. He was, you know, in fact, he demanded it, you know, and the IBF did. And he decided to take this fight with Cleverly. I thought that was a mistake, and I guess he made that, you know, that point moot. Cleverly pretty much did have to take this fight, though, because this was going to be his stepping stone to an HBO deal. So, you know, he had to take a fight, let's put it that way, that was going to test him. When I, you know, Tom Hauser, a friend of mine and a great writer for a number of websites, takes a poll with a bunch of matchmakers and, you know, in my case, former matchmakers, different poll, like every month or so, on a division, you know, where would we rate the fighters? And, you know, goes ahead and publishes that poll. And one of the months that we were required to, you know, rank light heavyweights. And so, you know, I had an opportunity to watch some footage on guys like Cleverly, for example. And also, you know, as I mentioned to you, Hopkins, next opponent. And I was far from impressed with Cleverly, you know. And I think that you gotta take an extra look. I don't want to sound discriminatory, but when these guys come from overseas, Britain, Australia, wherever, you know, any part of Europe, you know, you gotta kind of take it in some ways with a grain of salt, and you really want to see if they can fight or not, because there are promoters over there that have political connections that can get guys title shots easier, you know, that have pretty good TV deals to where they don't have to travel that far from their home, you know, turf. And, you know, guys can win titles and support titles there, you know. And Cleverly was not, in my mind, you know, a real world-class, you know, top-of-the-line light heavyweight. And, you know, when I was watching footage on Kovalev, you know, trying to project what might happen with a fight with Hawkins. This was back when we were talking about that. You know, I saw a very quick, aggressive puncher and another guy who could be busy, not on the order of a Martinez, not that busy, but busy enough, and a guy who was a pretty good and accurate puncher and a guy who would hurt you if he hit you. So, you know, that spelled trouble for Cleverly, and, well, he didn't box Cleverly enough, I suppose, because he just couldn't avoid getting hit, and he was hurt when he got hit, period. You know, got floored in the third round twice, softened up, fourth round, end of story. It was like, you know, it was like Kovalev was just saying, I'm your daddy, you know, and I'm just coming to take this belt from you, go back to your room, kind of a thing. And it's exactly what happened. Where Cleverly goes from here, I don't know. But Kovalev now is in a pretty good position. Because I guess in a pretty good position or bad position, according to whatever way you want to look at it. Would Hopkins want to fight him now? Who knows? You know, I mean, it would be a better purse for him now. But, you know, clearly he's a guy that's dangerous for Hopkins. So, you know, you know, who knows from there? But TV will demand that he fight somebody. And so there will be a fight made somewhere with some named fighter with something at stake. And who knows where that's going to be. But as you mentioned, there's some possibilities there for this guy. You win, you get more possibilities. You know, is pretty much the bottom line here. And when you win, it can't be a bad decision, you know, in the long run. So you got to chalk that up to, I guess, in hindsight, being a good decision on his part, gets his title belt. So now he's a guy who's got a world championship and is, you know, in some ways going to be going on an equal footing with some of these fighters. Maybe not Hopkins, you know, because Hopkins is a bigger name, but, you know, some of these other guys that have championships, right? So, you know, he might be about as dangerous in the light heavyweight division as Golovkin is in the middleweight division for anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, definitely. And we'll see. I mean, at least he doesn't have – it's not like – we'll see what HBO, you know, how they keep him busy, because a lot of people are already giving him Stevenson Cloud winner. And that's fine. I have no problem with that. But the problem is – Tony Bellew, you know, in the UK, he actually has the mandatory. He's the mandatory, so they're going to need to step aside money for him. And I don't know. He's worked himself to this position. I don't think he's going to let this payday go. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure how they're going to work that out. There is always step aside money, but
isn't he already stepping aside? Isn't he for Stevenson?
Just for exactly. He stepped aside just for this. So it's going to be tough. That means even more, you know what I mean? So I don't know.
Yeah,
I think they'll get Kovalev another opponent to showcase against, and then maybe then try to get it with, you know, whoever comes out of there.
Well, now you got the war of words going on. You know, you've got, you know, John David Jackson is doing a lot of bragging about how this would be Hopkins' last fight and if he ever got in the ring with Kovalev, et cetera. Roy Jones, you know, offered the opinion that Hopkins could beat either Kovalev or Adonis Stevenson. Well, I think my opinion offhand is that I think Hopkins would probably be too clever for Stevenson, because I think he could probably turn him, you know, Stevenson's more of a one-handed fighter than Kovalev, let's say, and you know, I think a veteran who has handled a lot of guys you've seen, you know, the Tarvers, the Pavliks, the Clouds, you know, people like that, could probably, you know, do something like that with Stevenson. Now, as for Kovalev, I'm not sure, you know. I'm not sure he could toy with him and play with him. I think that Kovalev... I'm not sure he could hit hard enough to keep Kovalev at bay for that long. But I guess, you know, I guess we'll see. I guess what I'm saying is that Stevenson might be a little bit more susceptible to a bag of tricks than Kovalev. But that's just my off, you know, that's just my off the top of my head observation there.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting because we'll see. I mean, it all come down to that, but you're right. I mean, it is interesting because although Kovalev, he's not slow, but he's not necessarily a Calzaghe, Jermaine Taylor hand speed, and that's what B-Hop has had issues with in the past is hand speed and combination, but he is a combination puncher that isn't just a just go in there and just rush you. I mean, yeah, he does throw combinations, but he's pretty good with distance. You know, he's pretty good with distance and not just trying to overbear somebody. He does actually kind of measure you out. So, yeah.
Chris, the one thing all guys have problems with, if it's placed correctly, is power. You know, power will keep the opponent away. Power will take a guy out of a game plan. You know, if you're not... If you're clumsy about it, like I have a feeling Stevenson could be, you know, yeah, Hopkins could riddle that kind of a thing. Whether it's the same story with Kovalev, as I mentioned, I don't know. Hopkins has something else to worry about in the meantime. Obviously, he's got that fight is back on with his guy that had problems with visas, I guess, before Murat. So he'll have to get by that, which... You know, I don't anticipate him having too many problems with, but, you know, after that, I guess the talk will start.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. The talk will start. You know, just kind of talking about a couple more things before we get you out of here, man. Curtis Stevens, here's a guy that he's on the NBC Sports Network. He's knocked some people out. He moved from 168 down to 160 now, and now it sounds like for November 2nd at the theater at the, you know, MSG, it sounds like it's a done deal with Golovkin. Talk about his chances. Obviously, it's nice because he has power, but it's a way, can he deliver that power, and will he be effective in that fight? Obviously, Golovkin comes at you too. It seems like he comes together with the plan, you know, comes forward with a plan a little more than Stevens. But now that fight's made, what do you think of that fight? I mean, it's going to be nice to see Golovkin go against a big puncher. But a lot of people are pumped up because of the last three fights from Curtis Stevens. And it's like they're just forgetting what, you know, they're forgetting the Brinkleys. They're forgetting some of the other fights.
Yeah. Well, people like to draw loose analogies. I stress the term loose between Golovkin and a Mike Tyson, for example, in terms of power and intimidation and so on. And I will tell you this, that, you know, I always felt like there were two kind of fighters that could beat Tyson, you know, when he was running around undefeated, which was, you know, one guy who could really just come in with all the ability to box his ears off, you know, and keep him at bay. The other guy was a guy who could come in like a Sonny Liston type of guy who could come in and just overpower him, you know. In other words, match his power and exceed it even, you know, or land first, you know. Anybody else was not going to have that much of a chance. Well, you know, Buster Douglas come along and did a beautiful boxing job and knocked out Tyson. In the case of Golovkin, I almost feel like the same way. You know, he's not what I would call a finesse boxer. He's not a solid boxer, per se. So a guy who had that kind of ability could give him trouble. I mean, look at Sergio Martinez at his best, and I don't know if he's ever going to get to his best or back to his best. Could have given him some fits because he was so elusive and in and out and frustrating him and so on. But the other kind of guy is a guy who, hey, they come out, they trade, he gets caught, and we're going to find out who the better catcher is maybe at that point, you know. And if not, we find out who the better pitcher is, you know. And so that for that reason, I see Stevens as being someone who would be of concern to Golovkin early in the fight because he's a pretty fast starter. He really does have a big league left hook. And, you know, he could hurt you if he hits you. So if Golovkin leaves himself in that position, like it, look, he could get caught and he'll, you know, he'll be we'll find out about his chin, number one. Number two, you know, when a guy gets caught by a good puncher, anything can happen. So I guess the chances of Stevens are in the anything could happen category, you know, when a guy has power. But I don't know that that's going to, I mean, I don't know that that's good beyond the first couple of, you know, two, three rounds. I think beyond that, Stevens loses steam. I think Golovkin wears him down. I think that there is a difference, not necessarily a huge difference, but certainly a difference in terms of class of opponent beaten, you know, by the two guys. I mean, Stevenson has not been in with the greatest roster of opponents, and as you mentioned, every time he's moved, well, except for the one guy who, the Polish, I guess he was a middleweight then, I think. He was 22-0. He beat him, and that's a decent fighter. But, I mean, everyone else that he's moved up against at all has beaten him. So there would be question as to whether, you know, we know Stevens is a world-class puncher, or can be. The question is whether he's a world-class fighter, and he's in a different class than Golovkin. My guess would be that this fight might go into the middle rounds, and, you know, Stevens gets worn down, you know, or starts getting greatly affected by solid shots he'd be hit with because, I mean, he, you know, Brinkley wobbled him, right? Brinkley knocked him down. Brinkley had him with an 8 count, I think, at one point, a standing 8 count at one point in the fight. He hurt him, you know. What will Golovkin do when a guy is there to be hit? So I guess that's my assessment of the fight. I mean, I think that Stevens would have a chance early, but after that, I think that he gets sort of gobbled up in a fight like that.
Yeah, and just the sheer, you pretty much know they're gonna swing, you know? So I think that's fun because you know how much power is involved, and if there can be an exchange in there, then all of a sudden, you know, then all of a sudden we're talking. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens there. But I don't know. I just think people are, I mean, obviously guys with power are always going to be overhyped. That's just how boxing goes. But I just think Stevens is way overpowered. But, you know, at least he is a true power puncher in a 160-pounder. Not a 154 coming up, showing hard or whatever, but I just don't like
exactly
his chances in the fight.
Exactly, but when you see him throw a left hook, you know he knows how to throw it. So there's a lot of guys that have big knockout records, and they go in there, and they're throwing these wide. Yeah, actually, Golovkin is kind of a guy like that. He throws a lot of wide punches and stuff like that. Stevens can fit a left hook inside of that. But I'm just saying that Golovkin has to be careful early with him, you know. And I think once he gets past that, though, I think he could own Stevens because I don't think Stevens can keep up a pace of punching for that long. I think he'll get tired. I think that he hasn't faced a puncher like this either. You know, so who knows if he could even take more than a couple of those punches. So there's a lot of question marks involving this guy. And again, looks to me like a difference in class.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Charles, unless there's something else you wanna cover, I appreciate you stopping in, man. It's always good to hear from you and get your take on the weekend and you know, boxing stuff going on, topics and stuff. So if you got anything to add, feel free. Otherwise, thanks for coming on, man.
Well, what I've got to add is that, once again, I appreciate it coming on this top internet show on boxing. Look forward to being with you next week. And I'll probably have some kind of announcement next week, so I'll be looking forward to that. I'll be doubly looking forward to that, I guess you could say. So
perfect. I like the way
that
sounds.
Once again. Okay.
All right, take it easy, Charles.
Thanks, Chris. Bye bye.
Take it easy. All right. Well, you know, a lot of people are pumped up all of a sudden. And I think Matty Fresh is on. 510, who is a longtime listener, I see the number one is pressed. I'm pretty sure 510 wants to talk. I'm definitely going to go to him as well. CT, I'm going to get back to you. I want to talk about this Friday Night Fights card. I want to talk about, you know, how that went down. But I also, before we do that, I also want to touch on that FS1 card. Danny Jacobs exploded on that in the main event, and I want to talk about the Monday Night Boxing in the FS1 Golden Boy Live, the idea of it. Of course, I'm going to talk about, because it was a debut of it, I want to talk about the show, no, not just the fights, but the broadcasting and some of the good and the bad and some things maybe they can work on. It's their first, you know, fight, so I mean, you know, but a lot of people are talking about it. A lot of people are angry that it's, you know, on Monday night. Because of Monday Night Football, I think you do have to remember it's every other Monday. So that's really only 8 football games a year. So let's keep that in mind. But they also mentioned, especially if it starts to do pretty well, and remember, it's all year round. So it's not like, you know, what, like I said, once January hits, it's a wrap for Monday Night Football. So, you know, if you could have it every other Monday, you know, there's going to be, what I'm trying to say is it's not only going to be Monday. There was mentioning of once in a while being Tuesday, and that's something that they're going to try to do during Monday Night Football. And it's flexible enough to where, you know, on FS2, their sister channel, kind of like ESPN2, they're actually doing a card the week of the Mayweather-Canelo fight. That would be September 12th. And that's a triple header with a lot of good fights on it. It could be a Showtime HBO, you know, it could be like a Showbox or a Showtime special edition, something that they've recently come up with, or it could be like a Boxing After Dark. I know it's not huge names, but the matchups are pretty good. So there is a little flexibility. I understand, you know, but I mean, it's not like Fox FS1 was made just for boxing. So you can't just be like, oh, they should have done it on a Thursday or they should have done it on a Tuesday. Well, Thursday's tough because of college football in the fall, too. Don't forget about that. And you're going against, they want to show college football, and there's going to be college football going on ESPN as well, you know. So, and on other Fox stuff. So it is what it is when it comes down to that. But we got 90 seconds left of the live stream, and I'm gonna go through the callers. There are some people that just popped on to hear the archive. If you want to join, press 1. If not, you just want to hang out, that's cool too. Like I said, we're going to recap ESPN2 Friday Night Fights, the FS1 card. We're going to talk now about the whatever 510 wants to talk about, and maybe some, you know, some recap or whatever. But I also want to talk about the Showtime doubleheader and preview and predict that as well. I'd like to thank my guest, Samaje Thomas, who's got a fight coming up very soon, Friday, August 30th. It's at the Cicero Stadium in Cicero, Illinois. So definitely looking forward to that. And you know what? 510, I guess he accidentally pressed one, but the fact that I was going to go to him next, he hung up. So 510, man, call back if you wanted, because usually you're in the archive. I didn't mean to knock you off. You just you never pressed one. So when I saw press one, I thought maybe you wanted to talk. Some people press one every time. So I apologize, man. I didn't mean to blow up your spot. And for the people on right now that jumped in right before the archive, listen, if you just want to listen, that's fine. But, you know, you're in a mode now that you can't get in. So I'm sorry, 510. You can listen to the archive after. I apologize, man. I saw it press one, so I thought you wanted to talk. So anyway, I do want to get into this Showtime triple header, and if you know, I'll definitely, you know, Maddie, I want to hear your take on this triple header for HBO. And like I said, I do want to talk to Friday Night Fights and the FS1. But right now, I just kind of want to switch it up. And we've been doing so much recap for a lot of the show. I want to switch it up a little bit personally. And then, like I said, let the callers do whatever they want to do. This Showtime doubleheader is just action fights. Yanni Gonzalez, he started pretty good against Ponce de Leon in September, last September. Then Ponce started closing the gap, landed a good punch to where he knocked him down there. It's funny because Ponce de Leon, at the top of his head, I mean, his brain was damn near showing. You know what I mean? He was cut real bad on the top of his head. And, you know, he was ready to go. No problem. You know what I mean? And if you look at where Ponce de Leon comes from, you'll know why. You know, he's a survivor. You know, he comes from the mountains. He comes from a tribe. A bunch of his brothers died. The guy is a survivor. And I'm not taking anything away from young Yanni Gonzalez. He may have a really tough upbringing and survived a lot, too. I'm not taking anything away, but I doubt he lived in the mountains with no electricity. And basically a lot of his family died, and he was one of the only survivors. And now he's here fighting. Either way, his brain matter was basically exposed, and he kept fighting. Yanni Gonzalez got cut, and he was done. They had to stop the fight. Now Ponce won the fight, you know, once they went to the scorecards. But the funny thing is, not the funny thing, it's funny and kind of like, oh, really? So, because I was staying at the MGM Grand that weekend, last Independence, Mexican Independence Day. And Ponce de Leon is in the hospital getting his brain stitched back in. And you got Yanni Gonzalez at the bar, at the lobby bar. And those who have been in the MGM and have gone to the Garden Arena and all that, they know the lobby bar. I mean, if you're a writer or a fan of the sport, or an upcoming boxer, or whatever. You love boxing, you're around boxing, it's your job, whatever the hell. Go there. And from about 10 to 3 in the morning, you'll see, I mean, I've seen everybody. I had a conversation with Bert Sugar that I on the low recorded just because, you know, I wanted to prove that I was talking to him. I didn't ever release what we were talking about. I didn't sit there and record something and then release it. Like, oh, I got an interview with him. It wasn't like that. I just want to interview it so people believe me. Because we variety. Anyway, Joe Calzaghe, Ricky Hatton. I mean, the list goes on. Madonna that night. The thing is, Yanni Gonzalez is up there talking to girls, and hey, why not? He's all drinking, hanging out. But it's just funny because Ponce's got his brain matter hanging out. He's ready to fight. But Yanni was like, I don't know, man. Let's quit, you know. Either way, the ref stopped it, doctor stopped it, whatever. Long story short, he got a couple wins. He's always dangerous. He does have a style that he can counterpunch, and he's got power. He's a live fighter. Now, at this point in his career, how good is he? You know, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know how much he has left, but Abner Mares is fighting him. I think Mares is going to beat him. Being that Yanni Gonzalez can counter, I don't know. Will we see the same old Abner that just jumps on his opponent, much like the Moreno fight and every other big fight that he had before the De Leon fight, when he actually came out and showed the overall skill. Something I had been talking about for quite some time that I had seen on the way up. He just never showed it, and he brought it out. He brought it out because, you know, he has different styles, and he needed that because he knew that Ponce could counterpunch and had a lot of power himself. So, you know, the fact that the guy's a vet, the fact that he stopped good fighters in the past, maybe a while ago now, but he has stopped good fighters. He's been in there with top-level guys. You know, I think we're going to see kind of a mixture, maybe not as patient as Abner was with De Leon, but I think we're going to see a mixture, and then he's going to jump on him. But I have Abner Mars I feel like it might be a TKO in this one. I really do, because a lot of the times he would load up to the body and he would land big shots, but he was so content and I guess so focused on throwing just a grip of punches. Just a boatload of punches and just work rate and body, whether it be to the body or low, you know, whatever. He just wanted to work the dude, and he's got that style figured out now. He took a lot of punches, but so I think he's gonna be somewhere in between. He's gonna be a little more active than he was in the De Leon fight, but I do think we'll see a little more patient Abner in this fight. Now for the title fight that Victor Terrazas just got over Maharez. He's fighting Leo Santa Cruz. Now, this Leo Santa Cruz is his second fight at 122. He's got a title fight, 24-0, 14 KOs. The guy throws, I mean, we don't have to talk about how many damn punches he throws, 37-2 and one draw with 21 knockouts. That's what Victor's record is, the champ in this fight. I think it's a good fight. I think it's probably the best opponent he's faced. And plus, Terrazas is coming off a good win, too. Good back-and-forth fight with Maharez. Whoever, if you didn't see that fight, it's on YouTube. It's a pretty good stream recorded that I saw. I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember it being a very tight, good fight. And Maharez actually knocked him down late in that fight. He was bloody by the end of that. That was a great two-way fight. It started slow. It started kind of slow, but then it built. Taras, he's a good fighter. He's been knocked out. He does his last win to get the belt, and then the Fernando Montiel, who, you know, was not maybe in his best state at the moment. Those are his two best victories. So some people question those victories because when they came, and, you know, it is what it is. But Leo Santa Cruz, and this is going to be a good fight. I think Leo Santa Cruz, what I did see is Maharez was able to land and score a lot to the body. I'm talking a lot to the body. And obviously, Leo Santa Cruz, that's his, you know, Sunday punch to the body. No matter what hand, it's to the body. He can throw a right hand. He can throw his left hook. The guy puts his punches together. And he'll get hit and smile. So, action fight, obviously. But I'm going Leo Santa Cruz. And I think he's going to stop him. I really do, because I just think the work rate's going to stop him. I don't think it'll be one in particular punch. I mean, once he's breaking him down and it gets to the point where it's a one-sided fight, I think that'll take a while, though. You know, because Taraz, he's a good fighter. He's a good fighter. But he was very, you know, the effective aggressiveness. And I miss Harold Letterman, by the way. They took him off HBO After Dark, but that's all they've been doing, Boxing After Darks, like the whole summer. Even though there'll be like three championship belts on the card, they'll still call it a HBO After Dark. I just think it's because the budgets are a little lower, and, you know, Hirschman's being smart. He's like, hey, if my ratings go up for HBO After Dark, which they were really low, and obviously lower than the championship boxing, but, you know, those ratings have been very solid. So I think he's – I don't know what they're doing there, besides putting on good cards. I'm not trying to hack them. The triple header is great, and I'm glad they're buying fights and not just fighters. But I think Cruz is going to stop him. I think no matter what, once the midway of the, you know, the fight gets going, I definitely see him making it a one-sided fight. But I think it's going to be a two-way fight for quite some time. And then either TKO or maybe it'll be a distance fight. I mean, Leo Santa Cruz, you know, he can go the distance. He's been knocking a couple of guys out lately, but, you know, he can go the distance. He's gone a couple times. Considering how young he is, he's definitely gone a couple times. So I'm picking Santa Cruz by TKO as well. I think we're going to see two TKOs, but it's going to be action. I mean, it's going to be it's a good style matchup, and it's a good belt holder at 122 for him to go after. And Kiko Martinez, CT mentioned it, and CT just dropped off. He's at work a lot of times when he calls in. And Carcino, a couple other people called me and said they couldn't make it. So that's no big deal. It's all good. But CT mentioned earlier in the show, Kiko Martinez at 122 against Leo Santa Cruz, man. That would be a fun fight. I'm not trying to build Kiko Martinez up like he didn't already, you know, get stopped and stuff. But as far as just action fight, that would be a great fight. And, Maddie, I want to get your take. I know sometimes you call and you're kind of just listening and you press one, but sometimes you just listen, and that's cool too. I don't want to go to you if you're busy or whatnot, but I'm going to go to you here just to see if, you know, if you're on mute or whatever, that's cool too, no problem. But Leo Santa Cruz against Martinez would be a good look. That'd be a fun one. You wonder if Moreno is involved at some point too. A lot of people are already bringing Abner Mares and Leo Santa Cruz together. And if they bring that fight together next, if they both get by their opponents, I'll be happy because you know it's going to be a good fight. But I'm not going to be mad at Golden Boy if not, to be honest with you, because they are at different weight classes, barely, but they are. I'm not trying to make an excuse for Abner Mares or nothing like that, or both. I think Leo Santa Cruz still needs to get better. I think it's a fight that I don't like when fights marinate too much, you know, when guys are in their prime and they're ready to go. Not to say that Cruz isn't his, you know, this is his 25th fight or 26th fight, but to me, I think he could improve and make it a better fight. Now, he's going to be a come-forward fighter all the time. I just think that, you know, he's been slowly stepping up his competition. This is another step. And I think being able to take another step rather than just going right to Abner, I think it'll make it a better fight. I still favor Abner Mares in the fight no matter when they fight, to be honest with you. I mean, unless it's 8 years from now and or 6 years from now and Abner is past his prime or something, that's different. But I'm saying if they fight within a year or two, why not let Santa Cruz make sure he's good at this weight, you know, because he's already on weight as of a couple days ago. He's a big dude, you know, at these weight classes. He's bigger than Abner if you look at him, his shoulders, and he's just bigger. Of course, Abner did look really good at 126. So either way, if they go right to it, I'll be happy. If they don't, I'm not going to be that pissed. I know a lot of people are like, they better make it. I don't feel that way because I feel like Leo – I think it's too far of a step, you know. He's been, I mean, who's his best guy that he's beaten? He beat a faded Eric Morrell, and he beat some guys, but, you know, I don't know. I think he needs a little more seasoning to make it more of a two-way fight the whole time. But that's just me. That's just me. I'm going to check out some of the other, you know, ESPN2 Friday night fights. Has a fight card. It's Tyson's promotion. You know, it's his first card as a promoter. Check out some other fights as well. But I'm really looking forward to this Showtime doubleheader. I like what I see in Orozco. Orozco, I think his name is. He's going to be on the undercard as far as the show Extreme. So look for that as well. Matty Fresh, man, like I said, if you're good to go and you can talk, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, not too much, my friend. Just hanging out. I was just listening to the show. Yeah, man. HBO this past weekend was great. I really enjoyed the Gil Barker fight, and I enjoyed the Cleverly Kovalev knockout. I was I've been waiting for Cleverly to lose. You know what I mean? I was looking for it to happen, and it happened. So I mean, not that it was a real big surprise, but I was pleased with it. And I'm just going to be straight up and honest with you, dude. I've been playing this stupid video game, and I didn't get a chance to watch the Friday night fights or the Kiko fight. I just fast-forwarded through it because I thought it might be a boring fight. I'm just being honest with you. But I'm going to catch up on it soon here, man, if I could step away from this damn Xbox for a while.
First of all, I don't hold anything against you. Second of all, I like your honesty. Third of all, wait till you see the frickin' crowd. It was for purchase tickets, it was like 8-5, but it looked like, you know, with comps and all, it looked like they went over 10,000. I haven't got an official number. I've heard anywhere from 8-2 to 8-5 to 10,000. To 11,000. So I haven't heard an official number, but the crowd and the setup is just great. And I'm going to talk a little bit about it in a little bit, but it was great. The way they set it up, the way they started the show, you're going to like it, man. You're going to like it.
It always makes a fight so much more entertaining for even the home viewer when, you know, you can see that there's a ton of fans and everybody's partying and everybody's having a good time and people are getting into the action. It makes for such a better viewing experience, I think, you know?
Yeah, and that's
instead of an empty casino.
That's right. Exactly. And that's exactly what, you know, here's the thing about Nathan Cleverly, just to comment. And I, you know, we've always held this, and a lot of people that know what the hell they're talking about, you got to love the UK fans in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I actually heard you talking, and this was a big topic this last Sunday on the BoxingVoice.com, or Boxing Voice, either way, go visit the website. But, you know, the show, and, you know, how you know, I thought you made a lot of great points as far as, you know, that's what they have, the size of their, you know, just a couple of countries there, and that's what they have. So obviously they're gonna gravitate towards that. But at least they support the hell, win, lose or draw, support the hell out of their guys. And you know, the thing about the Cleverly, so big ups to the UK on YouTube and on the show. I've always had UK fan supporters, and I love them. I love them to death. The thing about the YouTube, back in the YouTube days, which I'm going to be filming more for this fall and try to get back with my predictions as well, those videos, because I love doing that as well. But they were always cool. Even though we could be on the, you know, complete opposite sides of a fight, and it would always be cheers or always be something cool at the end. Even though, you know, it's not like over here where we just go after each other. And sometimes you go after each other to the point where you're like, you're just being a dick. You're not actually being even funny. You know what I mean? That type of thing. And just hater, that type of thing. But I will say this. The Cleverly thing, I heard from UK fans, I would get messages sent to me a couple of times a month, easy, saying, hey, check out this fight, check out that fight. And not necessarily check out the fight because I knew the fight was happening, but they'd say, I want to get your take on Cleverly. I want to get your take on this guy and that guy. And they'd send me some footage, and I'd always be like, hey, man, you know, the guy puts his punches together, but I got to see him against somebody. You know, I can't – I'm not the guy – I just don't do that. And especially when he's standing right in front of people. I can't – the guy's just standing in front unleashing his punches, that's not really doing much, and he's not knocking these guys out. If anything, you know, some of the TKOs were even questionable. So to me, I always said I'll wait and see with him. I need to see him. And when I saw that Tony Bellew fight, and I thought he lost the fight, I knew right then and there. I put KO money on Kovalev just because, you know, I just knew it was going to happen. I didn't know what round, even if it was going to be late, whatever. I mean, to me,
when a guy's coddled, Chris, his whole career, dude, it's right. Like somebody doesn't believe in you. It's either yourself or it's your trainer or it's your promoter or it's your manager. Somebody doesn't believe you. When you're 2018, 20, 21, 23 years old, and you're fighting on a world level, somebody believes in you. Somebody is backing you, like an Adrian Broner, or when Rios came out, or Canelo Alvarez, perfect example. The people believe in these fighters, and they believe in themselves. And they've, even though they're, I mean, you know, you could argue that all of those guys' records have been coddled. That doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that Cleverly was fighting exclusively in the UK. He was fighting limited guys. He was fighting fights, you know, and even though that pool of people is smaller, so it's tougher for them to compete on the world stage, that pool of people is smaller and for them to draw from, you know what I mean? Like for his opponent, right. Cleverly is not a great fighter, and there's not any great fighters for him to fight at his weight class either in that country. So, you know, if you beat them all up, it still doesn't really mean, you know what I mean? It doesn't really mean anything. Yeah. It would be like I said, like everybody in California beating everybody in California up. Who's the best 175 pounder in California? Well, that's just California. You know what I mean? You got
right.
Everywhere else, the rest of the world. So, you know, it's interesting. It's definitely an interesting topic. You know, I like the European fighters. Like I missed the Kiko Martinez fight and I didn't watch Friday Night Fights. I watched Paul Smith versus Gary Buckland, which was a great fight and a great knockout. Like one of the best knockouts I've seen in, you know what I mean, in some time. So,
I think I'm going to watch that tonight.
Yeah, watch that fight, dude. And, you know, I would tell your listeners that only watch HBO and Showtime, like check out some Box Nation, check out some Sky Sports. Like if you have enough computer savviness, you know what I mean, to log on to a computer, you can find the stuff, you know what I mean? It's out there. And it's worth watching. And even if they're not as skilled, it doesn't matter. They're still fun to watch. It's like, you know, I mean, sometimes I watch boxing to be entertained. Sometimes I watch boxing to see who the best guy in the division is. Sometimes I watch boxing, you know what I mean? It's not just to see the best guys in the world. I like the sport of boxing, so... Yeah, I'm like semi defending the Eurobums, and I'm semi not defending the Eurobums. I'm sort of in the middle, but I have a better understanding of the geography and the people over there than Ness does. That's for damn sure. But shout out to Ness; he's my man.
Yeah, and he makes a good point though too, because of the hype. You know, like I said, I got message after message. Dude, what do you think about this guy? That I don't know, man. Like. You know, he hasn't fought anybody, and the second he fought that Tony dude, I thought he lost the fight. And then when I'd say they'd get, you know, some of them would start to say something back to me, like not being, you know, rude about it, but they were just like, hey, you know, like, no, it was a close fight, but he won. I said, well, that's cool, man. But if he's in a close fight, if he showed all these weaknesses with that dude, then that tells me, and then that's when they went into slow motion. Because if you think, even Murat, who doesn't have much, but at 20 fights, there's a lot of guys, no matter where you are, 15 to 20 fights that still aren't fighting anybody. And Canelo Alvarez, you know, the difference over here is we kept demanding more. People do forget, though, in his fourth fight, he fought Miguel Vasquez, who's a world champion level guy at 135. Is he a guy that can... You know, he doesn't have a lot of power. He's a skillful guy. He's an awkward guy. I don't think he's the top level, you know, top guy at 135, but he's definitely a champion type guy, and he has skill. He definitely has some skill. So he was fighting some guys in there, but not even that. We were applying the pressure on Canelo as he was getting fed these guys. And a lot of, you know, the difference is the European guys, they get to stay till they're 24, 25, 26, 28 in the amateurs, and they get paid. So now I'm not saying they're making big money, but they get paid enough to survive and stay and learn. So that's another difference too. If you see like Canelo, he turned pro when he was 15. So he had to learn in the pros. So, but he finally did step up. You know, he finally did step up, and look how he fought in that fight. Now, some people thought Trout won the fight, but you got to say you saw some skill out of him and some power in that fight. So we were giving him
somebody
you know?
Believes in Canelo. Somebody believes in Canelo, you know what I mean? And cleverly to be like 26, 27 and have a world title that he didn't beat anybody for, you know what I mean? Right, and hold on to it for so long without fighting anybody. And then the first time he steps up, you know, he gets smashed. And, you know, at least Cleverly has something to fall. Cleverly has something to fall back on, being a mathematician. You know what I mean? Like, he's some sort of math expert. And so if the contest, you know, Saturday night was to do the fastest calculus problem, I'm sure Cleverly would have beat Kovalev. But, you know, unfortunately, when you step up to the big boys, you know, you got to put your big boy pants on, and he didn't have them on. So it is what it is.
Yeah, and like you said, you have a belt. It's after that they actually slowed down the competition. And when you don't keep stepping them up, at least Canelo was taking steps up. Now, they were minor baby steps, but they were steps up. I mean, people can hack it all they want, but we were hacking it at the same time. So we were saying, hey, dude, you got a belt now. You're on your 40th fight. Fight someone now. And we were putting the pressure to the point where it finally happened. So it's
different. Dude, using that logic, Chris, I love it. Using that logic, Kell Brook's going to be the next one that gets smashed to bits. He's going to get smashed to bits. When
Talk
I was an AC man,
on a career. I mean, they put a break on him big time.
Carson Jones twice, like, I've watched both of those fights, and they were, like, talking, like, the network that it was on was talking up Carson Jones, like, he's, like, the biggest competitor in the United States, and, dude, I'm, like, watching this shit, and I'm, like, I've never heard of Carson Jones, but I'm rooting for him because he's American, you know what I mean, period.
Right.
And dude put, a half a beating on Kell Brook, who's supposed to be the next greatest thing, and then to go down and do it, like, a Sinchenko fight. You know what I mean? When you were talking about Alexander and you were talking about, you know, fighting the best in the world, get out of here. Get out of here.
Right. Yeah, no, I hear that. What do you think about the Showtime doubleheader coming up? Leo Santa Cruz against Victor, the champion who came out the Maharas fight. Terrazas. I think that's going to be a fun fight. Terrazas. Sorry about that. For some reason, I just can't figure out his damn last name. Terrazas.
They're tough.
That's going to be a fun fight just because, I mean, Leo's a fun fighter to watch. And Victor, you know, he's had some good wins, albeit against guys that were not in their prime. But he's going to come to fight. And obviously, Yanni Gonzalez, who a lot of people are down on, and he's past his prime, but he's still dangerous against Abner Mares. What do you think about this doubleheader?
Well, I mean, just first of all, the Santa Cruz fight, I think it's going to be a
entertaining fight as long as it lasts. I am a huge fan of his style. You know, the mini Margarito coming in, and he even kind of looks like Margarito, and the way he fights, I love it. You know, I was a huge Margarito fan, and I am a huge Leo Santa Cruz fan, so I'm looking forward to that. And what was the other fight, Chris, the second fight?
Abner Mares and Yanni Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah, Jesus, Abner Mares. He's sort of grown on me. I was thinking about him the other day, and with Victor Chinian win and the first Agbeko win, I was like, had such a bad taste in my mouth with Abner Mares. I didn't want to see him on my TV. I hated him because of the low blows and the dirty fighting, and I wouldn't mind that. In fact, I like the bad guys. if he didn't put that stupid smile on his face and act like, you know, he's like this innocent child that does no wrong and stuff like that. Like, so I had a really bad taste in my mouth, but over the last few fights, you know, him beating Moreno in the fashion that he did, and, you know, he's starting to, I'm starting to warm up to Mahrez, to be quite honest. But I think it'll be a good fight. I'm picking Mahrez to win the fight.
Yeah, I think Yanni Gonzalez is a guy that, you know, he's got power. He's a lot like Ponce de Leon, where you can't sleep on him because he's got that power he can counterpunch. But Leo Santa Cruz and Telraz, that's going to be a good fight, man. That's going to be a good fight. What do you think about, I mean, obviously Abner Mahrez and Leo Santa Cruz, to see that fight, that would be awesome. But if it took another year and they kept, you know, matching these guys up with good fighters, I wouldn't mind that either. A lot of people want it next. I still think Leo Santa Cruz to, not that it wouldn't be a competitive fight, I just think that he's still young and he still hasn't this is his best fighter he's faced. So yeah. To me, to go right to Abner, I think, is a mistake as far as making this a two-way fight for the whole fight. I think we can point to certain fights in his past, especially the one on CBS where it took him a while to catch up to a guy that really can't punch and has some boxing ability, but Abner Mahrez has boxing ability as well, something that he hadn't shown because he came forward so much. If it's next, hey, I can't wait for the fight, and I'm glad they're doing it, but I think Leo still needs a couple more step-up fights instead of just jumping right to Abner personally. I think it'll make it a better fight and give him the best chance to win, because up until now, his competition hasn't been great. He's a young guy, and I like the way they're stepping him up now, but he hasn't faced a lot of any top-level guys yet. So to me, if it's not next, I'm not going to freak out. You know what I mean? But I'm looking forward to that fight, don't get me wrong. But to me, I think that Leo still needs to be – is he going to get that better as far as his game plan? No, it's still going to be the same game plan. But I just think from a confidence level, he just hasn't fought a top-level guy yet. This is his first top-level guy that – how top-level is the guy? I don't know. You know what I mean? He's good.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know? I totally agree. I mean, you know, they didn't, even though Abner Mahrez has fought, you know, great competition and has been fighting tough, I'm not looking at his record, but I'm thinking, like, you know, around the time Victor Chinian, that's the time he started really, really stepping up. And, I mean, that was a close fight. Like, he didn't annihilate Victor Chinian. Like, that wasn't really a close fight. And, you know, at the time, and maybe even still now, if I would rewatch it, the low blows may have been a factor. So you can't move a guy up too fast. And, you know, Abner Mahrez, if he doesn't have the best resume, you know, he has one of the best resumes.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a top three resume. You know, him, Floyd, Carl Froch, Pacquiao, like, the, you know, these guys have serious, serious resumes. And, You'd have to favor Mahrez going into the fight. I mean, as much as I like Santa Cruz, you know, I haven't seen him beat, like you said, a real world beater, and that's exactly what Mahrez is.
Yeah, to Raz, this is his biggest step up. So I want to see how he does, but I obviously the issue that Mahrez is going to run into is the top three guys he wants to fight is with Top Rank, and so. And by the way, he's going to be a free agent. So you never know how that's going to work as far as can they keep, you know, if they keep giving him good fights and paydays, that's one thing. But that may force the Leo Santa Cruz fight after if he does get by Terrazas, you know. If he can get by Terrazas, that's different. But I don't know. I think they should let him marinate. I'm not usually a guy that wants to let it marinate. But I feel like Leo is just starting to come on the scene, and you could see him improve. What do you think of Golovkin and Curtis Stevens now that fight's all but done? What do you think?
Dude, I might go to that fight, and I don't know who the hell you were talking to a few callers ago, but he was saying, like, that Stevens could be
dangerous early in the fight, or you were saying something. Dude, Curtis Stevens doesn't have a chance against Golovkin. Golovkin has 300 and some amateur fights. I've seen him knock out Butte, spark out cold, you know, as in the amateurs, and he's blasting out real tough guys, you know, so far, you know, with Rosado and Macklin, even though he didn't ice Rosado, you know, he still slaughtered him. And
yeah.
Curtis Stevens probably had about 30 amateur fights. You know, he's been beat by Jesse Brinkley. His best win is Alvin Ayala, you know, or this most recent win. I mean, it's a showcase fight, and that's why, yeah, I don't know. I disagree.
But you want to go to And that's why.
I want to see a massacre. Yeah, I want to see a massacre. I mean,
Stevens will believe in his power, you know. He'll believe that he can land a left hook, and he's not afraid to throw it. So that's why I think it's a good opponent just based off of getting knocked the F out, like you said. I think
Golovkin's never been knocked down. Golovkin has never been knocked down, and it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Well, it's going to happen. Maybe I'm sure it'll happen eventually, but I don't see Curtis Stevens. I mean, maybe, you know, Stevens is on another level now with this win. You know what I mean? He's got the confidence, because that's really what it's about. Is, you know, like you said, you think you can win, you think you can land the shot. You know, you got to think like a champion to be a champion. I mean, Golovkin has too many tools in the toolbox, to use a cliche, not to mention, you know, the devastating power. And, yeah, I mean, why drive to New York City to see a mismatch? But I think they'll put something
It'd
decent
fun,
underneath
yeah.
it. And
it
would
be fun.
It would be fun. I mean, when you see a grown man get knocked out cold in person, it's like he's getting shot in the head. It's crazy.
Right.
It's wild.
It
you
is.
Know what I mean? So, and I'm on board the Golovkin train, so let's, you know, choo-choo full steam ahead.
That's funny. I agree. The thing with Curtis Stevens is, you know, once again, power and Golovkin power and Kovalev power different, because it comes with skill, and it comes with controlling distance, and it comes with combination punches, but not overly trying to land a bomb and just throw punches to throw punches.
That's what Stevens' power is. His is reckless power. His is wild, unharnessed power. And you're talking about Golovkin, who has all that experience, like 350 amateur fights. I mean, that's like, you know, I mean, that's like as many as Rigondeaux had. I mean, he won. I don't think he had many losses.
Yeah, I think he had five losses.
Jesus, 300 and some and five? That's outrageous. That's
like
outrageous.
I mean, he fought a lot of guys, too, that we all know. You know what I mean? When you knock out people with headgear, it's a different ball.
Oh, my God. It is. You ain't kidding, man. What fights on this horizon are I don't want to look too far ahead, Chris, but, dude, what fights are you, like, most looking forward to? Obviously, the Matisse-Garcia fight.
Right.
Any other fights, anything else out there that has really caught your interest? Because I have one in particular.
Well, Matisse-Garcia, you know. I'll tell you what, an underrated fight card. That this is what I hope this FS1 can be about at some point. Very underrated. Now, I'm not trying to say, oh my God, it's the best, you know, stuff ever, but this is the September 12th, okay?
Mm-hmm.
September 12th, and this is what, let's hope this Fox Sports 1 and 2, because by the way, it's going to be on 2 once in a while, just like ESPN and ESPN 2, as far as split. They're never on normal ESPN, but you know what I mean. They have two channels. Fox Sports, and they're you know, Fox Sports 2 is only, I think, 50 million homes, whereas Fox Sports 1 is almost 90. But three fights, okay? Hugo Centeno Jr., who's a up and coming guy, who's got a lot of power and skill, against Julian Williams, who actually showed out pretty decent. That's the first fight, okay? This is a low level fight, but it's a hardcore fight. Then Badu Jack, against Marco Antonio Pirbin, who actually just was in a fight with
Pirbin. Pirbin. Yeah.
That's going to be an action fight because Pirbin, he brought it against against Bika. And Badu Jack, he can fight. He can fight a little bit. So I think it's my point is it's a step-up fight. It's a real step-up fight. It's not just a random fight for Badu Jack to look good on Mayweather Promotions. It's a step-up fight considering how many, you know, fights Badu has. And then the rematch, Sean Porter versus Julio Diaz. Now, to me, this isn't some huge card with big names, but I bet you two out of those three fights will be fun because the rematch between Porter and Julio Diaz, Diaz has got to be feeling pretty good because a lot of people thought he won the fight, and then Amir Khan fight, he obviously fought well. And
really
to me, I think that's an underrated card that hopefully this Fox Sports 1 and 2, this is what they're actually putting together. This type of stuff where you're like, okay, wow. And
yeah, it sounds really good.
You know, and I got to say, I am looking forward to just because of two dudes that are big and are going to bring something, the David Haye and Tyson Fury fight. I got to admit, I'm kind of looking forward to that. And another heavyweight fight in September as well, you know, Areola and
That's the one I like.
Well,
The Areola Mitchell fight. That's what's captured my interest. I like Seth Mitchell. I met Seth Mitchell. He's cool. You know, he was definitely coddled. You know, he's definitely not as skilled as Areola. He is just a pure athlete. He's not a seasoned boxer. You know, I mean, He talks about how he started his career. He was talking about like watching the Tommy Zbikowski, you know, on the watching him fight on the Pacquiao Margarito undercard, and him thinking to himself, like, yeah, I could fight. You know, if he can fight, I could fight. Dude, I've been watching boxing 10 years longer than he's been thinking about boxing. Like, I mean, so he's definitely limited, you know. And the reason I'm excited for it, dude, is because people always complain about the heavyweight division. Well, let's see some clarity in the heavyweight division. Let these Americans fight. Let the damn Americans fight each other. You know, I have no problem, you know, with us fighting whoever. You know what I mean?
Right.
Unless you're a Klitschko, I would advise any American heavyweight to wait that storm, wait that one out. But dude, fight each other and see who the best is. Fight, you know, fight each other, and that's simply the reason why is, you know, Areola is coming off a loss. Seth Mitchell was coming off a shaky win, you know, a loss before that. Areola is way, way more experienced.
Sure.
You know, but Seth Mitchell, I would go to say that Seth Mitchell is more disciplined. I would go as far as saying Seth Mitchell is probably a little wiser outside of the ring. You know,
I was going to say not inside the ring per se, but yeah, outside. Oh my God. I'll tell you what though.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Maddie. You know how here's the thing about Areola that you get sick of talking about, but we obviously have to talk about his weight. But did you see the pictures of late? You know, instead of talking about he's going to be 240 or 242 or 235, whatever, instead of talking about it, did you see the latest picture from about a week ago?
I may have.
Dude.
Yeah, he's looking a little
He looks, yeah. I mean, he'll always have man titties. They're not going anywhere. But he's looking pretty slick. He's getting closer to 235, I'll tell you that. And when he's around 240 and down.
Remember he tried that like 2 years ago. He was on a nice little run. He was fighting like four times that year. He lost a ton of weight, you know, and then he got around those long neck coronas.
Yeah.
You know, and
exactly
he couldn't
control. And then boom, he's just up 258. You're like, dude, what are you doing, man? Like, and I'm just sick of hearing from him and Henry Ramirez. I'm sick of hearing, this is my last shot, or not even Henry, because Henry, I'm sick of hearing him saying what his weight's going to be, and then it doesn't turn out to be that way. But it's not all his fault. He should have left him a while ago, so maybe Ariola would get a different trainer, and finally he'd be like, hey, maybe it'd have been best for him to just leave him, so he'd actually be like, damn, you know? I don't know. He's tried everything. I'll give credit to Henry. He's tried everything, but at some point, when you're knocking on the door and dude's not answering to go run, it just gets old. But I saw the pitchers, and when you see the pitchers, it's a different ball game. Now, hopefully that wasn't like circa 08, you know what I mean, and they just flashed
right.
him out there. That'd be some mess.
But, dude,
up.
Seth Mitchell, I mean, he's got a hell of a physique. But, you know, that's not going to win you a fight. You know, and the fact that he's lighter is definitely going to help him. I just think, you know, that his experience will probably win the day. I mean, if I were to bet on the fight, I would probably bet that Ariel will knock him out, you know, probably before six. And but that's not what I want, you know. I just like Seth Mitchell. He's one of those guys right. that has sort of caught my imagination, and, you know, I just like the guy, so I'm going to root for the guy. It's one of those, just plain and simple. You know, he's definitely not as skilled, but I think I'm just going to root for him. I think he's, you know, he's a good guy. He would be a good neighbor.
Right, exactly. Like, and besides the last seven rounds of his last fight, the guy's been in some fun fights to watch now. You know what I mean? I mean, people think that whole fight sucked. Well, not the first four rounds didn't suck. It was the last, like, seven or eight that was real slow, no doubt about it. It sucked then, but other than that, he's been in a lot of fun fights, man, you know? He's been in some action fights. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Another fight that I'm looking for, it's not made yet. The point is they are negotiating it because they tried to do it on a FS1 card, but there wasn't enough money for Rosada. But it sounds like Quillen is going to try to get on that the B-Hop card. And
that's
Quillen,
sweet, dude.
Quillen against Gabe Rosado. And if it's on Showtime,
nice.
Then there'll be more money for Gabe. That would be a good fight, too. I like that fight because we know Gabe brings it. He's coming off a really solid performance at middleweight again, so now he's getting used to the weight. We know he can take a punch. Gabe's funny because he got sparked out, you know, so early against Angulo, but he's one of those guys that has improved, and then he took all that punishment for Golovkin, but, you know, he actually punched him back and made him work for it at least, you know. I like that fight. If that fight goes off, and they're definitely trying to make it go off, but Quillen against Gabe Rosada, I like. I think it makes sense from the East Coast, and you know, right now, the middleweight division is kind of tied up on HBO a little bit. So, you know, I like that
fight. I like that fight. And like you just mentioned, dude, what I don't like, and I, you know, I like Kid Chocolate, but what I don't like is how Kid Chocolate can hide behind the Golden Boy excuse. You know what
right.
I mean? Like, all the 60-pounders are outside of the Golden Boy stable and are HBO, mainly HBO fighters. And, you know, the fact that Kid Chocolate can sort of say what he wants on Twitter
right.
and in interviews and stuff like that, and know in the back of his mind that shit will never happen. That's kind of rubbing me a little bit the wrong way.
Yeah.
But, I like Kid Chocolate, you know what I mean?
No, I know what you're saying, though. He is getting a little lost with that stuff.
Yeah, that's just sort of rubbing me the wrong way. But, I'd like to see him in a Rosado fight. I have no problem with that. I mean, you know, Rosado's come a long way. And if, you know, if your mentor is Bernard Hopkins, you know, that can't be a bad thing. You know, he's improved significantly, you know, since getting smashed to pieces by Angulo. You know, he's improved even though he doesn't win every time. Even though he doesn't win any time, he's going to give you a fight. He's there to fight. You know,
and the difference between him and Curtis Stevens, here's the difference of the NBC Sports Network. Now, he didn't go against, once again, top-level guys. But on that MS, when he got built up, right, a year ago, Curtis, the same thing's happening. He came off a loss, and then he had like three fights on that network, and they build him up. but they built him up against better guys than what Curtis Stevens fought against. Now, like I said, were the top level guys? No, but I mean, at 54, Soto Cross is not as effective, but he's still tough. He also fought an old vet who just tough as nails. Whatever, that's more of like a Curtis Stevens fight. But he also, and I just lost his name, but he also fought a pretty good fighter. And for whatever reason, I've had him on the show and everything. I just can't remember. They were just better veteran fighters than what Curtis Stevens has gone against on that NBC Sports Network. And you're right. The guy has improved a lot to the point where you keep wanting to see it. And then in this last fight, he really looked good against Yaelion Love after getting down early. He looked really good to close out that fight. He scored the knockdown. And obviously, you know, that's not a loss. So because of the cheating either way. And
They screwed him over that night, didn't they? I mean, it was a close fight, but I think that Rosado won that fight, especially
close
with
fight.
The knockdown. You know.
Yeah, close fight. And if there's a knockdown, and not just the knockdown, but the bigger punches the whole fight almost, especially second half, were him.
Yeah.
Whereas the Gil Barker, there was a knockdown, and that was a tight fight. But to me, Barker just closed out rounds much stronger. And, you know, I don't know. That was a good fight, too. That was a very good fight. Let's see here. Yeah, I mean, you got anything else you want to cover otherwise?
No, I was sort of rambling there for a while. I wasn't even planning on talking, but you were like, you know, hey, Matt, are you there? So I figured, what the hell?
Well.
But good talking to you, Chris. Great show as usual, man. Keep up the good work.
Yes, sir.
Keep fighting a good fight, Chris. All right, brother.
Yes. All right, buddy. All right, me and Matty Fresh playing matchmaking, and not just matchmaking, but also, you know, what we're pumped about in the future. I'm going to go over some things, and I'm going to recap that Friday Night Fight cards real quick. Like, there's some fights going on Thursday, tomorrow. Amir Mansour against Maurice Harris. A lot of people are Amir Mansour. People were all on him not too long ago. That's going to be in Delaware, Dover, Delaware. And then ESPN2 and ESPN Deportes Friday Night Fights. Mendez versus Usamani for Mendez's IBF Junior Lightweight title. There's also a vacant featherweight title on the co-feature. Like I said, Mayweather. Like I said, Tyson's, you know, it's his first promotional card. He teamed up. You know, I like what Tyson as a front man obviously works. Talking about he wants hungry fighters, and obviously just him at the show brings attention. But I like, if you haven't read, I mean, I like, he added John David Jackson to an already nice stable of trainers. So he's got a head coach trainer. But he's got a bunch of co-trainers because obviously they're busy with their own fighters. So I like what he does there. I think he's got like 5 or 6 trainers just for his guys. That's smart. I mean, you know, if you pick up a guy and he's already got a trainer, you're not going to rip that apart either. But there's a card going on the WAPA America, WAPA America. I don't have that channel, but it's from Puerto Rico. So, hey, I'm guessing it's pretty good. Why not, right? Also, Friday night, a vacant WBA interim. I love this one. Vacant and interim junior bantamweight title. We don't, you know, Nishiro, I know him, that's for sure. So that's going on. California and a couple of, you know, there's some fight cards out there. But obviously, Showtime doubleheader. Orozco and Bellows, another Linnell Bellows, another Mayweather guy, is probably going to be on that Showtime Extreme, the undercard. Jojo Diaz Jr. is going to be in action as well. A couple other, you know, Golden Boy prospects as well. And Ronald Gavril. He's going to be on there, a super middleweight. So it's actually a pretty good undercard for prospects anyway. And then Fox Deportes once again comes back and has a card in Mexico. Unimas from California, and then PandaFeedTV.tv from Atlantic City has a fight card as well. The Ukraine, Germany, Arthur Abraham's back in action. You know, there's some Germans going at it. Let's put it that way. Kubrat Pulev and Tony Thompson, IBF heavyweight title eliminator. That should be interesting. That's in Germany as well. Omar Navarez, who's, you know, we all know him from a little bit ago from Argentina. He's got a fight coming up for his WBO junior weight belt. So there's some action. There's some action. We may get a great fight someplace. We know we're going to get action fights. I think it's a pretty decent card on Friday Night Fights. And we know we're going to get action for Showtime. Got a couple minutes left of the show. I'm going to try to wrap this up real quick-like. And try to get through this Friday Night Fights. First of all, the way they started with Teddy and Joe Tessitore in the ring, I like that a lot. You know, I thought that was awesome. That's a good way to start it. And a cool thing they did is they showed this heavyweight fight that turned out to be another good heavyweight fight. Malo and Spielka. They showed it on the big screen to the live audience, and the live crowd was going nuts. Then the fight was going nuts. Spielka, you know, he may have hurt the first two rounds he won. He was winning the third round. He actually hurt Malo at the end of the second round. But then there was a little delayed left hook it was just crazy because he was like, it was just a delayed reaction. Left hook that just, boom, put him on his butt. There was a great exchange, too, later in that round. He actually buzzed him back and put him on the ropes with a straight right hand later, did Spielka. But Spielka, more great two-way action, both landing big shots. But just a massive, the way Tessitore put it, massive left hook. The legs just dropped out of Malo. And another good fight, good a little undercard fight, but really Gabriel Campillo against Andrew Fonfera. I thought he won the first round, jab, couple right hands, but then Campillo won, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. He won a bunch of rounds. The jab right hook, the jab itself, the straight left hand. He was mixing up the punches, uppercuts, going to the body. I mean, he was giving him problems. He was winning the fight easy. And then Fonfera had a little success at the end of that seventh round. And the eighth round, two-way round, Campillo did get hurt, though. He got hurt by a right-hand counter with like 10 seconds left of that eighth round. So success in the seventh. Eighth round I gave to Fonfera in an action round, but he got hurt a little bit. And then basically an uppercut to the head and a right hand to the body for the KO, but just a flurry of hooks, short uppercut as well before that. It was like an uppercut or a hook right to the chest as well, it like below the chest. And it was he knocked him out. I mean, that great crowd that was going nuts was quiet as hell for that fight because Fonfera was getting beat. FS1, I liked the card. I liked how they started with the fighters in the ring already announced to the crowd. They just started the fight right when you got there. I liked that a lot. I thought that was very smart. Gusha, he won. So did Eddie Gomez and obviously Danny Jacobs. You know, at the end, it was a bad closeout. They got cut off in the interview, and so that's one of those things I didn't necessarily like. But Danny Jacobs, I think he won all the rounds, but it was going to be a good fight. It was going to be a good fight. And that left hook, I mean, he hit him with a good shot, a few left hooks by Lorenzo early in that fight, actually. And he was moving pretty well. Danny was actually moving with his upper body and legs even more than I thought he would. But he landed a good right hand and a left hook that kind of got him off balance to the ropes. And then the left hook right hand, whoo, just dropped him out. Highlight reel knockout. The Dinner of Champions, I forgot to mention this, Ringendial didn't get invited. Crawford, the new guy, got invited, Terrence Crawford. Nonito got invited, but no Ringendial by the HBO Dinner of Champions. Zab is with Golden Boy, Mayweather Canelo this weekend, the All Access kicks off. Terrence Crawford has an opponent, and I'm about to get cut off here, so I'm going to go. We'll talk about that next week. You guys enjoy the fights. We had a great weekend, and, you know, this might be an under-the-radar type weekend. Showtime's going to be good, though, and I think Friday Night Fights will, too.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival, the bullshit, the whole bag, and when you become the world champion, you're like, you know what, I made it. That was so good.